festive free speech with all the trimmings.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Kath is recording these links late September 2015.
In LA.
And I just thought I'd pop in because it's me you want to hear from on Christmas Day. Why are you listening to this on Christmas Day? How bad has your life fallen apart? What's gone wrong with your December the 25th that this is... You shouldn't be hearing this. No one should be hearing this.
Well, I'm hoping they're not, because I've put it together very shoddily.
I'll be listening to it. But I always listen to my best ofs. And what time of the day is it going out?
Normal time, 10 to 1.
And touch myself.
Oh, God.
So that's what I will be doing.
Thank you very much, by the way. I've been told to thank Father Christmas, who apparently has been voicing all the programmes up until this point. He's gone home, so thankfully he's not hearing Ian talking absolute filth, because he would get a bag of coal.
I've just made up a joke.
Go on.
My youngest made up a joke that was actually quite clever. Why are people scared of cows? Because they're cowards. That's
okay, there's something there.
There's getting there, isn't it? That's actually, it's not great.
How old is he?
Six, he's nearly seven. There's a sophistication developing there, which you'll get from this joke that I've just made up.
Oh, God.
Why did the man, I was going to say Joseph, but I won't actually, because the people could be offended. Why did the man want to have sex in a barn?
What are you doing?
Why did the man want to have sex in a barn? Literally just made this up. This is great.
Because he was...
No.
Hasty.
No. He wanted to have his way in a manger. Whoa! Yes!
That's physically impossible. Yes, they're tiny.
He was a tiny man. It was a big manger.
You'd have had to find a tiny person to have sex with.
Anyway, guys, have a great Christmas and a very happy New Year. We'll see you on New Year's, so whatever.
Yeah, and we won't mention it too much because it's going to be New Year's for people who don't like New
Year's. Oh, by the way, here's the revelation I found. So we bought the Blockbusters board game for $1.99 in a charity shop to play on the New Year's Eve show, right? And I just looked at the box. It's in the boot of my car. It says... Gold Run not included.
Oh.
You have to buy a separate Gold Run game. So there's no Gold Run on New Year's Eve, but we'll have the...
Can we not make one up?
No, can't. Gold Run is not included.
We need to have a meeting about this.
Merry Christmas, everybody!
Can you get out? This is supposed to be my thing.
Best of my show.
Well.
Sorry? Oh, you...
I edited it. I put a lot of me in it.
Merry Christmas, everybody!
Ow.
Sorry.
A lot of me, and first up, a whole lot of Manny. Now, if you heard this back in September, you'll never forget it. The good news is you don't have to wait months and months to find out what happens to Manny. So listen to this bit. Listen to us through the adverts, which are all brilliant, and then you'll hear what happened next. Okay? All right.
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We've worked out who Peter is. We think it's Pete Best.
Pete Best is still alive as well.
She said he might be still alive and he wants to contact us.
Oh, God, I'm so glad we don't stream this show on YouTube anymore, because that last few minutes was awful. I've just tweeted a picture of Catherine. Honestly, she looks so much like Paul McCartney tonight. And no one's disagreeing. It really does.
Oh, God. Right.
By the way, do you remember when Paul gave us this?
Hi there. Paul speaking. Listen, I need your help. All I want you to do is just log in on pledge.meatfreemondays.com and pledge your support to the idea of Meat Free Mondays.
You can do all it right now, please.
I need your help. Please do it. We'll send all these pledges to the politicians and then they'll do something about it. So I need your help. Please just log in pledge.meatfreemondays, or one word, .com. Pledge.meatfreemondays.com. Pledge.meatfreemondays.com. Pledge.meatfreemondays.com.
You can do it right now, please.
Forgot about that. Classic.
Just play the last bit again. I love that.
Yeah. Oh, hang on a minute. I've lost it.
He's just so musical. He makes everything into a song.
You can do it right now, please.
Come, you can do it right now, please.
But he doesn't always make the song into a black man's accent. Which is what
that was awful.
This is what he's doing there.
Oh, dear.
He's popping up on a couple of podcasts that I've listened to. And come on this show.
Come on, Macca.
Come on, Macca. Come on. Let's go to Jerry. Good evening, Jerry. Sorry, we kept you waiting for a long, long time. But I hope you understand that the dead are more important than the living.
getting on. Not very well.
You're not very well?
No.
Uh-oh.
I paid £10 for the premature ejaculation mixer.
You paid £10 for a premature ejaculation mixer?
Mixer, Frankie Goose to Hollywood.
What is he talking about? You did what?
Frankie Goose to Hollywood, the ejaculation mix. Last 10 seconds.
Oh, I see, I see.
He's
doing a well,
he's doing
a Jerry joke. So, I mean, he's saying words that are meant to be. No, it's not. That's the thing. You can't blame it on the delivery. Your jokes are rubbish. It's not. Don't blame it on the Parkinson's. It's your jokes.
It's amazing. I was on Saturday, though.
Yeah.
I thought we'd be good. I'm Cracker Jack.
Cracker Jack!
Is that voice? That boy has it right. I think Ryan and that woman are up to something. I think it's set up so Ryan wins it, gets the money, and then he shares.
Who won? What? Are you talking about the major on the millionaire?
The Big Brother thing.
Oh, the Big Brother thing. Oh, you think that he's... Oh, that right. Well, he doesn't win any money, though.
Don't they? What did he win?
The celebrity, they don't, they win a career for 6 months and they win tens of thousands of pounds as their fee. They don't win anything.
Oh,
they might get like a badge.
They're pointless,
like Paul Ross's quiz. Yeah, well, you know, Toff didn't win anything in the jungle apart from a renewed career. That was the prize, but we also got paid tens of thousands of pounds. Although I was the lowest paid person in the jungle, but can you believe that? And I gave them the most value and I got the least amount of money. No, she's not. Go away. You've been very, very naughty tonight, Jerry. And Parkinson's or not. Come on. A little bit of respect for Kath's unborn baby. And now we've got the DNA results in, and it turns out that Manny, you're the father.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, man. You're going to be look, daddy again, Manny.
It's more likely to be you, Manny, than anyone else.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you, Ian? It's Kath. You do make more bloody evenings.
Hang on a minute. I should have shut the door earlier. The vibe just got sucked totally out of the room there.
He just said you make his evening. Why are you doing that?
Well, because he's ruining mine.
Don't talk to him like that. He's the father of my child.
He's ruining my vibe. Why would you let him put himself inside you? he's sucked the vibe out. It's like we've invited a skeleton in and we're interviewing it.
Hello.
Dear God, Manny Man.
How are you?
Come on!
I've come to tell you something.
Okay, go on, what's this?
I went to town today.
Yeah.
I thought I'd tell you today.
A telly?
No, I said I thought I'll tell you.
Okay, I thought you said... Well, I thought you said you bought a telly.
I thought you said I bought a teddy.
I was feeling that bad. I bought a Stanley knife.
Oh, Manny!
I sat on this bench.
Manny!
I sat on this bloody bench.
Yeah.
In a quiet place.
Serious heads are on now.
And I put my jacket up a little bit. And I'm so tempted today.
Yeah.
Really. It just pisses me off. I want to go back to work. I used to work. I can't bloody work. Pisses me off.
Okay.
Sitting on, dossing. Very tempted today.
What stopped you?
Wasted a pound on a bloody
Stanley knife? It'd be a crap Stanley knife for a quiz. What stopped you?
I don't know. If I do that, they're not going to get any insurance money and they're going to suicide.
Is that I don't believe that's what stopped you. I don't believe that's what stopped you. What stopped you?
That didn't stop me. Just, I don't know.
But something stopped you. So was the knife pressing your flesh?
No, I had it out.
Right,
I had my sleeve up.
So you were close?
Yeah, I was close. But
something must have stopped you, man.
Just avoiding my bloody head.
Yeah, but something must have stopped you. Try and think. What was it? You had it there. You had the opportunity to end it all there, right? And you chose not to. You chose to roll your sleeve down and go home. So what happened? What changed?
the family comes into your business.
Go on. So what did you think? Don't give me the vague stuff. Tell me the specifics. What did you think?
Just about the family, the kids.
Yeah. What did you think about the kids?
My daughter's getting married next year, and I thought, well, I'm going to miss this.
Here we go. You're going to miss your daughter's wedding. Do you like a boyfriend?
Yeah, very nice.
Is he a good lad?
Yeah.
Yeah, are they going to have kids, do you know? Is that talking about kids in the future?
Well, if they get married, they probably will, yeah. And grandchildren, my son's going to uni this year.
When's the wedding?
Bank holiday August next year.
Okay, so you've got literally a year away. And who's going to university? Your grandson's going to university.
No, my son.
Your son is going to university. What's he going to study?
Chartered accountancy.
Hey, there's a lot of money in chartered accountancy.
Yeah.
It's not a sexy one, but it's a well-paid one, and he'll never be out of work.
This one's a dentist, the one that's getting married. The one's getting married after her, she's a teacher, but she packed the teaching and she went for an IT company.
Yeah. Is she happy with the change?
Yeah.
Enjoying it? Doesn't regret it?
She's done teaching for a year.
Yeah. So how many kids have you got, Manny?
Three.
Two daughters and a boy?
Yeah.
Okay. So the one who's getting married, did you say, was a dentist?
Yeah, she's a dentist. Yeah.
How does she put up with looking in people's dirty mouths? I couldn't do that, could you? Putting your fingers in someone's dirty mouth.
Wearing gloves and everything there, don't I?
And having to operate that sucky outie machine.
They use everything, don't they?
They use everything. Has she ever told you that sometimes if she gets a rude patient, sometimes she pulls out their teeth a little bit harder than she needs to? Has she ever mentioned that?
She's got a patient who's never brushed her teeth with toothpaste, just uses salt.
Salt? Well, I know that coal is good for cleaning your teeth, but salt?
Salt.
I bet that smells a bit whiffy, doesn't it?
Then again, I thought, if I do this, it's in the middle of a bloody park thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people are going to say, oh,
Steady on, that's all right. It's a yellow car, don't worry. No, it's a yellow car.
People
are going
to say, oh, their dad, her husband, bloody done that. You know, people talk, but then it was more about the kids and family.
Yeah, exactly. Well, forget everyone else.
Very tempted.
Okay, forget everyone else, though. Focus on the kids. So you've got your wedding next... And where is it happening? Is it happening in Birmingham?
It's happening in Druidwich, in the chateau something.
Beautiful. Big do? How many people are going?
About 600.
How does it work, these... Oh, Asian wedding. Asian wedding, of course it's 600. How does it work these days? Is it still the dad of the bride that pays, or does it get split a bit more?
It started to.
Right,
split. So,
600. 600 for the meal.
600 people.
Yeah, for the meal.
For everything. It starts from 12.
It's a big old do. Those Asian weddings are great.
Yeah.
And they have the best food, man.
They have the best food,
and there's always too much of it. Even for a wedding with 600 people, there will be too much food.
Whiskey, vodka, all on the table.
You can't... And here's the thing, Manny. Right, you've been dealt a really crappy hand of cards with your eyes and everything, right? But, you are a great dad. You are a great dad, right? And how proud are you going to be... sat at the main table of your daughter's wedding next year in front of those 600 people. How proud are you going to be, man?
I know, but it puts you down sometimes. Yeah.
I know it puts you down. And that's why you've got to set yourself little targets to meet in the future. And you've got a massive... a little target could be like, right, I'm going to have a really nice meal on Sunday night. Right, that can be a little target. You've got the wedding of your little baby... In under a year, man.
It's not that. Since when I left school in 1987.
Yeah.
I started work 2 months after. I've always worked. That bloody gets me down, that does.
Yeah.
You know, I've worked for nearly 9 years.
All right, then we need to find you a job.
No, nobody gives you. I've been to a job centre. Nobody gives you.
We're going to. We need to find you a job, Manny. So you live in Birmingham, Wolverhampton.
Wolverhampton. All the toilet cleaning, anything. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, this is our mission: is to find you a job, right?
Yeah.
So you live in Wolverhampton, and you're completely blind. You got a little bit of sight, but it's getting worse, isn't it?
Yeah. Got a bit of vision. I can see people. Can't see their faces. I can see you walking about. Can't see a face or anything.
And you just want to be productive.
Yeah.
Right. Here's what we're going to do, Catherine. And this is going to take a little while, Manny. This is that project. Can we find? First of all, because I don't know how you go helping someone with visual difficulty as a job, right? There's got to be a charity. Not saying you're a charity case, Manny, but there will be a charity that can give me a little bit more information on who I can speak to about trying to get a job.
Yeah.
There's got to be
Royal
someone...
Society for the Blind, surely.
Beautiful.
The job centre don't even help.
Screw those losers! Screw the job centre, they're losers! They are. They don't even give people who can see jobs, so screw those guys. I tell you what we're going to...
There's no... because of your sight, there's nothing you can do.
I tell you what we're going to do. Are you around Friday night, Manny?
I am.
Right, tomorrow night we've got a guest coming on who's going to talk about a radio show that she's made that's brilliant. I talked about it last night and I'll tweet tomorrow, right? How about Friday at 10 o'clock, we see if we can get someone on from the RSPB.
RNIB.
Lifeboats.
Royal National Institute of the Blind.
I made myself laugh at that. Let's see if we can get someone on. It's a bit short notice. Let's see if we can get someone on at 10 o'clock on Friday who can tell us how we can help our friend Manny try and make him feel like he's being a productive member of society and that he's got a few quid coming in and he's doing something.
It's not the money. I don't want the money.
No, I know, but you're not going to get rich, but I do think that the transaction of someone doing a service and then someone else giving that person money, it makes you feel more valued. Even if it's only a few quid, it makes people feel like they are contributing.
I've told the people in Wolverhampton, the blind centre, and they say, "Well, we don't do things."
Screw those losers! I'm sick of those losers. Screw those losers, Manny. Listen, ma'am, can we give you
all it is in is a bloody word since I left school?
Yeah, you're a grafter.
I don't like really getting dull money. I mean. Well, not dumb money, disability living allowance, whatever it's called. I don't want to get in there. I don't want it. I don't want to really work. You're worthless without a job.
You feel worthless. You're not worthless, but you feel it, yeah.
I don't know. These people sit the time and just go and sign on. Maybe rude. You know what I mean?
All right, listen, Manny. Let's speak on Friday night at 10 o'clock.
Okay.
All right, we'll give you a call, and hopefully you'll be around. Hopefully we'll get someone from the Royal Lifeboat Association to talk. And we might not be able to get someone... We might not be able to get someone, because it's late at night, but
no problem.
We'll sort something out. And we're going to get you a job, brother.
Good.
Because I don't want you to kill yourself. And if you're only going to... If you're killing yourself because you ain't got a job, well, I think we can fix that. I think we can fix it.
Hope so.
Right?
And Kat...
Yes.
You look after my baby.
Who's
all
the
right,
baby?
You look after the ones you've already got, and I'll do my bit.
Promise?
Okay.
I want you to make a promise. Promise you ain't going to kill yourself this week. Promise me that.
No.
Thank you, brother. We will speak on Friday.
Okay.
Take care, man.
Bye, Manny.
Love you, Manny.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to sort this out.
It's just a matter of getting the right person.
I'm not having a brother... kill himself because he ain't got a job. I'm not having that. I'm not having that. That is not a valid reason to do it because I think we can sort something out. He's a good man who's been dealt a really bad... He went blind in an industrial accident. Hard worker, grafter, went blind in an industrial accident, had a terrible 12 months with his dad dying on a plane. Dad died on a plane! And he's been close to the edge a bit. Hearing that story, and thank you for the honesty, Manny. I appreciate that. Hearing that has broken my heart. I'm not going to let you kill yourself, though, because you ain't got a job. I'm not letting you do it. You're going to be there for your daughter's wedding. That is happening. Those Asian weddings. Big old deals. Great food, man. Great food. Last 15 minutes of the show before Paul Ross, 0344 499 1000. This is Talk Radio.
Experience the unconventional.
Hello.
The unpredictable.
Don't you think that's a bit weird?
And the completely unorthodox.
It was my birthday.
With rule-free Ian Lee.
I was just trying to generate a bit of content.
The late night alternative with Ian Lee.
Hate alarm clock. Hate going to work.
On Talk Radio.
If I could make one spooky Halloween wish come true, Catherine.
Yeah.
What would you like that to be?
I'd like witchy powers.
Okay, forget something realistic. Well, you were talking earlier on about a caller that we hadn't heard from for a while.
Manny.
I've been working.
Yes! Oh, the best Manny! Reason. The
Manny!
Best reason.
Manny! 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 Manny!
Hang on, wait. What have you been working as?
Pardon?
You've not been working as, like, I don't know, a bank robber or anything we shouldn't be applauding?
No, it's the show.
Tell us what's been going on, Manny, because we've not spoken for a while, man. What's happening?
I work 10 till 3.
It's a bit lazy, mate. It's only 5 hours. I'm joking. A man who works 3 hours cannot criticise a man who works 5 hours. Where are you working?
It's about a mile from my house. It's called, shall I say?
Yeah, say it. Go on.
Fortel Construction.
Sweet.
Big company.
Yeah.
But it's only answering the phones.
No. Don't. No. Answering the phones.
Hang on. And they put me a big whiteboard.
Bit racist. Never mind.
Up. And a red pen, because, you know, I can see little things. Yeah. So if any of the people need tools, not the workers, like if they need a steel saw, so I'll just put, like, Monday steel saw or Tuesday morning steel saw. Just stuff like that. Making a tea. But it does me.
So now, is this, because I remember you were offered a couple of jobs just by people who listened to the show, and we also put you in touch with an organisation. So how did you get this gig?
I actually knew somebody that works there. She's a young lady. She works in the offices. And she was just talking to her gaffer. And
this is the best news.
I got a bloody job.
This is the best news. How long have you been doing it for, man?
It's been nearly 4 weeks.
Oh, mate. How long do you reckon before you screw it up? Monday, I'm joking!
It's only Monday to Thursday, though, which is good.
You've got to stop doing this.
Long weekend. Guess how much an hour?
£6.26. £3.
Go on.
I've got no idea.
£8. Which is all right, eh?
£8 an hour.
Just one. And the Indian one company, you know.
Just one. Hey, that's brilliant. So did you talk to that organisation that we put you in touch with?
I did.
Yeah?
I did talk to them. They're very helpful.
Yeah.
Very, very helpful. But then I did book an appointment with them to go and see them.
Yeah.
Then I got offered this position.
Brilliant.
I can't really refuse.
No, this is brilliant.
This position. But it's nice because I go, answer a few phone calls, make a couple of cups of tea, answer a few phone calls, make a couple of cups of tea, answer a few phone calls, make a couple of cups of tea. I'm loving it.
Thanks to you, though.
It is.
Well, all right.
It is.
Well. Do you know what? We'll take it in that case. We'll take it. Kathy's insisting we take it. We saved a man's life.
Oh, man.
You did.
And we have got massive stupid grins on our face.
Listening to you earlier on.
Yes.
You need to take some of your own advice.
Uh-oh.
Thinking of doing what I was going to do.
Well, listen. I know.
You know how it feels like now.
I know what it feels like, brother. I wasn't going to do it, but it felt like I was going to do it because, you know, mine is a chemical kind of thing. And but you're right. No, thank you for holding the mirror back up at me, brother. I appreciate
it. I'm a trip to something like that.
Yeah.
Them were strong, and those were very strong.
Yeah.
It's only a little, like, very small little family, but I'll tell you one thing, it was like, you woke up like a zombie. He's like a zombie all day.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you need to take your own advice, what you're dishing out to people. You know, you're helping everybody else, so you need to help yourself.
You're absolutely right, man.
You're lucky Kathy's there and your kids are there.
Yeah.
And you got a good job, and you got brilliant listeners.
Well, some are brilliant, some are idiots.
And where were you yesterday, both of you? Skiving?
None of your business. We went to see half of XTC performing live, which is something I never thought I'd ever get to see, and I did, and it was mind blowing.
And I got to see Ian with his people.
Oh,
oh my goodness!
The show was crap yesterday, anyway.
No, shut up! Come on now, you can't say that. That's not fair. That's not, it was different. Come on, that's not fair. That's not fair.
I thought you'd be doing some ghosties tonight.
Well, if you want to phone in with ghosts, have you got ghosties?
No, we've got that idiot
David Babcock is going to come on in a bit and talk rubbish about ghosts. We just get him on just to fill the time and we laugh at him behind his back because he's a pain in the arse.
No, you've got nice listeners, I mean, but your show is more like, let me see, family...
Family fortunes.
Like one big family, ain't it?
Well,
both of you. You treat everybody like equal and there's some stupid... Oh, it's coming on and so shabby.
Well, we're going to get some stupid ass in it. Like I say, David Babcock is unfortunately going to be calling in shortly. And
anyway, I forgot to ask Kathy.
Have to listen to that idiot wanging on about ghost, boring ghost stories that normally end up with
baby,
having Kat. Sex with a
your baby.
Yeah,
oh, it's coming along nicely, but I think it might just be a big cake.
Oh, bloody hell.
Are you pregnant?
How are you?
Remember, he knocked me up, didn't he? Remember?
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, knocked it up, man. A blind man. Knocked it down. Knocked it off.
Okay, well, now it's getting a little bit
cheeky fun.
It's getting a bit weird, Manny, so I'm going to cut you off. Well done on the job, brother.
Bye-bye.
Hey. Oh, I'm so happy to hear him happy.
That's what I'm talking about. That is great news.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Here on the Late Night Alternative, we make it a policy only to interview our heroes. And here's what happened when Ian met the late, great Chas Hodges. Spoiler alert, a knees-up ensued.
But yeah, your original question, yes, which I've gone
20 minutes
right
ago.
Off of it. How did you get together, meet you and Dave? Well, Don Arden said, yes, Eugene does need a backing band, he's on this tour, but Jerry Lee Lewis is on it as well. But you can back Jerry Lee or Gene. So he went, Jerry Lee, please, you know. So we backed Jerry Lee. I mean, my hero, yeah. Jerry Lee. So that was my chance to get on the road with him and just watch him every night, and that's when I really came on good. I was learning the piano then, even though I was playing the bass guitar for my living.
What was Jerry Lee like? Did you get to speak great. Too much?
Yeah. You could really talk to him in those days. I mean, we toured Britain with him, then we toured Germany. I was in Germany a couple of weeks, as I remember. I mean, one time in Berlin, we did 6 gigs in one day, the most gigs we've ever done. I mean, loading all our own stuff in. And he was grabbing cash wherever he went. A lot of army bases, of course. We started at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I think we finished about 2 o'clock in the morning. But you could talk to Jerry Lee, and I had loads of questions I wanted to ask him. You know, no one had ever spoken. But he used to come down, he was in Germany, you know, we'd come down to breakfast, sit around the table, have a coffee. And I'd, you know, things that I knew, like, I'll Make It All Up to You, which one of the songs that he did, it was a B-side, but I thought, that's not him playing the piano. For a start, it's in E-flat, and he don't play in E-flat. And that's one of the questions I asked him, no one else knew. I said, don't sound like you on the piano. I said, it's not really your key, from what I can figure out. He said, no, it's not, it's Charlie Rich played the piano on that. He said, I was a bit tired, it was the end of the night, and it was a Charlie Rich tune, and I didn't want to learn it, and he said, do it. And I just sang it, and he played the piano. So little questions like that.
And he must have been thrilled that you picked up on something like that.
Yeah, yeah, you could, I mean, he loved questions like that, because he was so used to being asked questions, you know, so you married a 13-year-old girl and all that. That's when he used to get wild and wanted to punch everybody, quite rightfully. But, yeah, I mean, I could talk to him and he would welcome questions like that, like I would. You know, people ask about recording sessions like you're doing now about Joe Meek. I love talking about it because it was a great part of my life, a great learning curve, as they say. And,
have we got to you meeting Dave yet? Have you...
I will get to it, yeah. Yes. You can do a lot of editing on this if you want. Yeah, how did I meet Dave? Well, I was on the road with Jerry Lee Lewis, and one of the rare nights off, I went round to my girlfriend's, and Joan, who I'm married to now, and we got three lovely kids.
Lovely
and,
Joan, she's delightful,
And Nick plays drums for us, and Kate is a lovely musician. Anyway, but we were courting then, and they always laugh, the kids, when I say, courting, Dad, was it? Yeah.
But oh, I still say courting. Yeah, oh, I still say that.
They think it's the right lot. It is. Anyway, we were courting. And I remember I was family in a lift home from her house, and the car pulled up, and it was an old mate from school who was the first skiffle group. I didn't even have a name, but the first skiffle group we started at school. Brian Juniper, his name was. I hadn't seen him for two or three years. And he said, oh, yeah. He said, hey, you're doing all right. He said, you're with Jerry Lee. You're on the road now. And yes, yeah. I said, fantastic. He said, I'm in a band now. This is my bass player. And it was Dave.
Right.
And I was playing bass. Anyway, they gave me a lift home. I lived in Edmonton. And I said, come out with a cup of tea, which they did, and we started talking, and with Dave, we almost identically had same taste in music.
You
we
just
loved,
clicked.
Yeah, we loved Jerry Lee, we loved Big Bill Broomsey. I love Big Bill, oh yeah, I love him, I love, you know, sort of his guitar shuffle and all that. But we also loved old music hall stuff, like Harry Champion, which our generation didn't really know much about, you know, but we loved it, you know, so we just struck up a friendship. But we never thought of getting together because we were both bass players.
Yeah.
But we did get together unbeknownst. The first Chas and Dave gigs were at parties because we'd turn up, someone invites us to a party. Yeah, we'd be there. Bring a party seven, the old big a pipkin of beer. And I was learning the piano there. If there was a piano there, I'd get on and do a whole lot of shaking, a couple of Jerry Lee things. But I'd have my guitar in a boot, David have a banjo, and we'd quite often, you know, play till dawn at whatever party, just me and him. So that was the first Chas and Dave gigs.
What was the conversation when you went, you know what, this sounds all right, we should maybe formalise this a bit and do something with this?
Well, it was only... leaping on... I was in a band called Ed Sands and Feet with Albert Lee.
Yeah.
We toured America, and I loved Albert's playing, but I saw the band left a bit desired. It was while I was in America that... and I'd known Dave for a good 8 years by then. While I was in America, I'm singing in an American accent, which sort of seemed all right. I don't know why, but it seemed all right in England if you're doing, you know... you shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. You're doing anything. Oh, he's doing a Jerry Lee number.
Yeah.
But when I was in America singing in an American accent, I thought, I felt a fraud. I thought, I'm singing to them. It's almost like I'm taking the mickey out of them. You know, they're thinking I'm, you know, I was coming off and they're going, what part of the States do you come from? I said, oh, no, I'm English. And that's when it really struck me. I thought, I've got to start singing
you're
in my own accent.
Yeah.
And I started to try out a few things in America, sort of singing in my own accent. And it began, it didn't quite translate. I thought, well, the next step is I've got to write my own songs with my own phrases. And then my own accent will come through naturally. And the more I thought about this in America, the more I became obsessed with it. And I remember I got home and I thought, Albert had decided to join the Crickets. We were going to get a band together, but he decided to join the Crickets, so that was fair enough. That's where he wanted to go. So I thought, well, me and Dave would be a great thing for me and him to get together. So I kept my fingers crossed. I rung him up. I said, I've got this idea about writing songs and singing in my own accent and just bringing myself out. I said, and do you fancy coming along with me and doing a thing together, like a duo thing. And he said, just so happens, he said, he'd just come back from America with a band called Mick Greenwood. And he said, I really enjoyed the tour. He said, but I'm not enjoying the band. Mm. See, so the timing was dead right. So, yeah, that's when we got together.
He's a great bass. I play a little bit of bass, so I kind of keep an ear out for bass. And I think Paul McCartney's a genius on the bass. Yeah. Carole Kaye in America from the Wrecking Crew, even though she was very rude to me in an email. She's brilliant. But I've been watching loads of your videos recently.
Yeah.
And I'm really watching Dave's fingers. He's a brilliant bass player because he's doing that. He's doing that thing that McCartney does, that kind of melody bass. Yeah, he's not just doing the root notes. Yeah. He's playing lovely little fiddly bits, going up to the top of there and little. He's a cracking player.
Yeah, he has. And I like to think that both of us are getting better all the time because there's always something else you can do. That's why the act always stays fresh. There's always some little bit. It basically the same, but there's always some, there's a little bass note that he might put in.
Yeah.
I mean, I go back to the early days when Albert Lee, our favourite guitar player, and I'm still in touch with Albert a lot, if he was around in the early days, he'd come and sit in with us, which he would, you know, in the early 70s. Oh, Albert's here, plug in, Albert. And he could follow anything, Albert. You know, he didn't have to know the songs. He would play them like he's known them all his life. And I remember in the very early 70s, he was around quite a lot. Then he moved to America, and we didn't see him for a while. He came back about 2 years, 3 years later, and he sat in with us, and he went, I can't find any holes to fit the guitar plate.
You know, what a compliment.
Over that period, you know, if there's a little gap, either I'd fill in.
Yeah.
We never rehearsed it, but Dave would suss that. Chaz does a little bit there, but I'm not doing a bit in somewhere else in another song. So Dave would do a little bass bit. And that's how it happened. Yeah. All the holes got nicely filled up. And Albert said, I can't find no holes.
What was the first song, whether it was live or you heard it in playback, where you went, shit, we've got something here. We've got something unique.
The first playback, well, the first album that we did, we used to do a lot of sessions. Well, I was doing a lot of sessions on the bass with Derek Lawrence. He was a good producer. I was still in touch with him there. He's a great bloke. And he and Big Jim Sullivan started a record company called Retreat Records. Yeah. And we were doing lots of sessions. Among them was one we did with Labby Siffre that Eminem sampled.
Have you had any money from that yet?
No.
Right, okay.
No.
Okay. Touchy subject.
Yeah, no, well, I didn't even know, you know, I was playing the guitar on it, on that one. Big Jim Sullivan was the arranger on it, as I remember. He arranged the whole album. So if anything, he should have got some money from it. And we're playing a part on that. You know, we booked on a session and Jim would go, oh, Chaz, can you play this sort of feel on it and that? Yeah, great. Dave, because once me and Dave got together, people would ring me up and say, you know, do a gig on bass, a session. So I don't play bass now, I play piano or guitar. Dave plays the bass, so I'd row him in on the session. So that's how it works, you know. On that particular session, Big Jim Sullivan, he was just, you know, Dave, can you play this bit? I think we had Ian Wallace on the drums in, great drummer. And him and Dave used to work things together, you know, sort of like little bass drum bits and bass together. We were playing an arrangement, so it wasn't out of our heads, it was out of Big Jim Sullivan's head that Eminem and Nick did. So I didn't really feel that Jim, deserved any money for it. It was Big Jim Sullivan's all his work. So whether he did, he's dead now, poor old Jim. Whether he did get any money for it, I don't know. But
at your best, right, I think your songs are up there with Ray Davis of the Kinks in as much as, you know, Ray Davis at his peak, before he kind of went American, he really captures Englishness, not Britishness, but Englishness. And I think that your best, your songs do that as well. They are, you know, partly because of the, you know, the voice that you're using to sing, but they just describe England and a period of Englishness and an English sensibility. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, and a lot of people sort of got the wrong end of the stick when we first started. That we were going, oh, we think we're the best, you know, London's the best. It was just purely, like I started out saying, I wanted to become myself.
Yeah.
So, well, I know what he's like because I've heard his songs. You know, I know the sort of bloke that the things that he's interested in, and how he phrases things because I've heard his songs. So, if I've achieved that, then I've done it right.
And
so,
that wonderful, you mentioned kind of the music hall songs. You've got that marvellous sense of humour as well that I think Ray at his peak has in. Things like, what was the one I was listening to? Doesn't anybody round here speak English anymore? That's a brilliant song. It's like, and Bollocks. They're brilliant songs and they're really, really funny, you know, which is tricky to do in a song.
Yeah, funny enough, I went down to the post office about a week ago and walking in there, this kid on the bike, he's about 11, I suppose, come on, his big, great big tyres on. He went, "You're Jason, yeah?" I went, "Yeah, yeah." He said, "Oh," he said, "I love your songs." I said, "What's your favourite one?" So he said, "Rabbit, Margaret and Bollocks." I thought, hang on a minute. He was dead serious. But, it's... don't anyone speak English? See, a lot of people got the wrong end of the stick there because of the title. It sort of sounds like it's racist.
Yeah,
but it ain't.
No, it's not at all.
It is. What got me was when reading when journalists in the Melody Maker and the NME started speaking in, you know, no way, and all these American phrases are coming. You know, we're going to go to the movies, and I thought, no, we go out to pictures. We don't go out to the movies. And that was the reason. When I go, it ain't right here, but it's all right over there. It's like, it's, you know, it's great in America because that's how they speak. Yeah. But we don't want us speaking.
We're going to the pictures.
Right.
But it is one of those lazy things where people hear Cockneys and they hear a title like that and they think, oh, it's going to be...
Oh, no, yeah.
And it's not. It's a really clever... Yeah. You know, critique of people, you know, using Americanisms, techno babble, and just not speaking English.
Yeah. It's remember what you used to say. A lot of people forget.
Yeah.
And funny enough, I mean, everybody says it now. No way. Everybody said, no, there's no chance. That's what we say. No chance.
Yeah.
They go, no way. But it's normal everyday conversation now. But I can remember when it started in the 70s. And like, I remember the singer in Ed Sheeran's Feet, he said, Ray Smith keeps saying, no way. You know, oh, I mean, we don't say that, do we? But yeah, it's gradually crept in, and now everybody says it.
What was it like becoming pop stars? Because you were pop stars. You did the Top of the Pops, you had the hit singles, you did the pop videos. That must have been strange.
It was strange. It was not as good as everybody else thinks.
Yeah,
I mean, Top of the Pops. I mean, the greatest are the gigs. They still are. I mean, and anybody who goes out gigging, I mean, it's like Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer, you know, I know Vic Reeves pretty well. He started, when he's dealing with TV people, if you've got to deal with them all the time, that's got to be a drag. I mean, Mark Lamar, he's a mate of mine, and he's not, you know. But when you go out gigging, you're just doing what you want to do, and you've got a crowd that have come to see you. Yeah, you haven't got anybody to say, oh, don't do this one, don't do that, and just do this. So, and I forgot your question.
What was it like being a pop star?
Yeah.
Was it it must have been a weird transition from having played music for so long to getting that spotlight on you. You know, that proper famous in the tabloids, on Top of the Pops, on the telly. Look, it's Chaz and Dave walking down the street.
It wasn't as good as everybody thinks. It was quite... I mean, being on Top of the Pops was quite boring. You'd spend 2 minutes rehearsing in the afternoon, then they say, oh, we'll see you in 3 hours' time. Yeah. And luckily, in those days, the roadies and that... I mean, I learned to play poker in the old days. It was a great pastime because it kept you away from the bar, you know. You're playing a bit of poker and you get a coffee and all that. It was a great time waster for times like that. But if you didn't play poker, you'd be careful. You could be stuck in the bar all the day, and by the time the gig come, you know, you couldn't do what you're supposed to be doing. But, it was a necessary evil because you wanted to plug your album and you wanted to plug your record, but the actual, you know, I've had to do that all the time. Well, I wouldn't do it all the time, put it that way.
Late Night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
You're still doing the live gigs in Royal Albert Hall again soon, isn't it? Is it next year?
Yeah, it's sold out already. Sold out really quick. Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, that is great. 20th of April, we're doing it next year. And we did it for the first time on our own. Did it a few times over the year on other people's shows. But first time, and we sold it out about 3 years ago, I think.
Isn't that funny?
And I still remember that feeling when we went on. It was like you're in a big football stadium, you know. And gentlemen, Chaz and Dave, and like just the roar that went up. Yeah. Just, I mean, I love that, you know.
One of my coolest moments for the Teenage Cancer Trust. I got to go on stage at the Royal Albert Hall, introduce a video about cancer and stuff, which was, you know, was very humbling. Yeah. But then I got to introduce The Who on stage. Yeah, I got to go, ladies and gentlemen, it's The Who. Yeah. And I was there, you know, where they were. But that roar from crowd is magical.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll say. I mean, we finished off, we did sort of three sets, really. We did an acoustic set because we had Martin Taylor on our latest album. So we did a bit of an acoustic set. Anyway, we finished the first main set off with Gertrude, and at the end of it, they were all on their feet, ready to go.
Yeah.
And the woman, the stage manager, this woman, she said, "I've been here 30 years. I've never seen a crowd do that."
Yeah.
When we went on for our main set at the end, they were just all up dancing.
I bet.
And had these great big stewards, you know, sort of. But I remember this great big bloke and this steward, like, they're trying to sit him down, which you can't.
Yeah.
They just want to dance. And this great big bloke looked at this steward and just held his hands out and, like, "What are you going to do? I'm going to dance whether you like it or not, mate." And this steward just sort of, like, looked down, shook his head and walked away. They weren't going to cause any trouble. He just wanted to
dance. There's a lot of affection for you, Chaz and Dave. And I interviewed Francis Rossi a while ago, and there's a lot of affection for the Quo now, and I think you had a similar thing that the Quo did, where you got that big pop career and you're on top of the pops, and then for a while, and I think this happens to all bands, happens to the Beach Boys, you sort of become a bit of a joke for a while because you're so familiar and so everywhere that you become a bit of a joke, and then if you can ride that out like the Beach Boys did, like Status Quo, like you've done, you become just, I don't want to say national treasure, because I don't even know what that means, but you become part of the... Yeah. You must be aware of that affection. You must have got a lot of that when you were diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah, a lot. And I put the my message to how I was getting on, I think, every couple of weeks to let people know. And I just, you know, I want to say thank you. There's loads and loads, thousands of like retweets. You know, how you doing? And so Twitter was great because in the old days, you know, you'd get letters and you got to answer them, which I would have done. But Twitter, I could instantly put out there how I'm feeling, and you know, and like yes, it's going good, and yes, I feel good. So yeah, I mean that was just a great, great warming feeling to know that all those people were just wished me well and wanted to come and see me on stage again. And the first one back was Hyde Park 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, on the summer stage there, and great, great afternoon. And we've developed, I don't know, by accident or by someone there up above, on all the festivals, it doesn't matter what the weather's like in the day, as soon as we go on, the sun comes out.
Yeah, there you go.
It's been doing
someone's
it.
Someone's on your side.
Yeah, it did it at Hyde Park, and it did it at Jimmy's farm a couple of weeks ago. But apparently on the summer stage, the promoter said, "We got the record crowd ever."
Oh, so brilliant.
it was
brilliant.
Great. Yeah, it was great to be back.
Now, banjo-lele, what is this?
It's a banjo.
This is beautiful.
My uncle Elf's banjo. He had this all through the war. I've seen old photos of him playing it with my mum on the piano. And
A six string. That's unusual. No, is it not?
It's a five string.
Has he not got six pegs?
Got six pegs, yeah, but it hasn't got... I don't know why it's got six pegs. It actually is a five string, but I've got the fifth string sort of moved over because I'm strumming.
Yeah,
I'm not actually using... The fifth string comes up halfway up the neck there.
Yeah.
But I'm not using it as a five string. I use it as a...
Go on, give us a little tune.
What are they...
Now my little dreams have all come true. Carol, I have been so lonesome now.
take that as, Chaz. Yeah. That's brilliant, man. Brilliant.
It's a great sound, isn't it?
It's wonderful.
Yeah. I've done it up about... when my Uncle Elf died, my brother acquired the banjo. But he said, you want it? He said, my brother played a little bit in the old days, but he said... you'd make better use of it. So I said, great. So I did it up. I've got the action going better and put a new bridge on it and put new strings on it.
It sounds incredible, doesn't it?
Yeah. I've got it really playing in tune as well. Right up the octave. So it's got that party sound, isn't it, straight away?
It just makes you smile. It just makes you smile. You can't argue with that sound.
I remember Albert Lee saying the same thing. When we was in Los Angeles years ago with Ed Sands and Feet, we went in a shop, and there was a six-string banjo there. And I think Eric Clapton ended up getting it, and he gave it to Dave. Dave still got it. But this six-string, I remember he picked it up, and he went, brong, and he said exactly what you just said. It's just instant smile. Yeah. You've got a smile, haven't you?
It's happiness.
It does, it really is.
I've noticed there's a piano here.
Yeah.
Any chance of getting a song on the piano? Would that be all right?
Yeah, I could do it,
Honestly, I'm loving this. Give us anything you fancy on the piano.
Okie dokie. Well, this piano is got a bit of a history about it. It's my daughter's piano, Bechstein. Had it in their house years ago, and cut long story short, we got it back, and my daughter's now.
This was yours years ago?
Yeah, I bought this where we used to live in Wearside. Bought this. So what year would that have been? About 1982 or something like that. No, a bit, a little bit late, about 85, I suppose. Then we moved, and where we moved to, it couldn't accommodate the grand piano. Sold it to a friend up north. Then my daughter Kate was, we were going to get a piano about 6 months ago.
She's a brilliant musician and singer-songwriter. Yeah, I've got some of her CDs. She's great.
Could do a whole programme at least about what Kate does. Yeah. I mean, her songs and the talent that she's got. But this piano she learnt on. I'm cutting a long, long story short. I managed to get it back. The bloke I sold it to, it just so happens he rang up and he said, I'm moving house, do you want to buy it back? The timing was dead right.
Isn't that amazing?
So we got it back
in
the house.
It's stunning. Oh, man.
Right, what do you want to hear?
It was anything you want, Chaz.
First Jerry Lee Lewis ones I learnt was off his album 1959. One of the first ones I ever played on the piano, I think. Hank Williams one. Goodbye, Joe. We gotta go. Me old man. Without a fly or to be rolled down the bayou. My Yvonne, Yvonne's me old man. Son of a gun, gonna have big fun.
Rock and roll. Look at the size of the grin on my face. That is brilliant. That is brilliant. Chaz, thank you so much for your time. I've also got to thank you as well. I think you are the reason that most people in this country know the order to pot the balls in snooker.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever I'm playing snooker, it's right, pot the red, then screw back for the yellow, green, brown, blue, pink and black. That's the only way I know the order is because of that song.
Same here. I had to look it up. I think my brother-in-law told me. Bruce, he's a great snooker player, so he told me the order of them. But, managed to rhyme it as well.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Festive free speech with all the trimmings.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Hi, you're listening to the best of the late night alternative. I'm Catherine Boyle and I'm not here. Me and Ian are having some time off and we'll be back on New Year's Eve live. In the meantime, we're running through some of the really good bits from 2018. And it was really hard to choose them. Now, I love the guests that we have. We only choose people that we really, really, really appreciate. But my favourite parts of the show come from the unexpected moments with the callers. Here's what happened when Sally and Susan got talking.
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
OK, Ollie, you've tried to be clever, but you've written aromantic, which looks like aromatic, so you lose.
No, I think that's a word.
Great point, Ollie. Thanks for making it. I really appreciate it. Okay, yeah, no, great point. Thank you, Ollie. I appreciate that. I really do appreciate that.
Now I've said it out loud. I'm not sure that Jack Black thing's true anyway, but you know, we're raising an interesting talking point.
I think you're thinking of Janine Garofalo.
No, why would I confuse those two?
Because she's asexual.
Is she?
Yep.
I thought she was gay.
No, she's asexual. Let's go to Sally. Good evening, Sally.
Hello, don't start bringing me into it. I haven't hexed anybody.
Well, hang on a minute, what are you talking about? We're sat here talking about Janine Garofalo.
You caused a whole lot of trouble earlier on, Sally, so... If I hear
I didn't mean to.
If I hear that smoke alarm...
I've heard it already.
Right, OK. If I was a witch, don't you think I would have sorted my smoke alarm out by
you
now?
You can never sort your own stuff out. I've seen films.
And as for hexes, if anybody puts a hex on you, they get it back worse later.
Yeah, but when someone just tweeted us, don't worry about the hex. The person that did it will get it back on themselves times three. Well, yeah. So what? That doesn't stop us having a hex on us. That doesn't alleviate our problem.
Just say, pack it in, bugger off, and it'll be done. Done, sorted.
I don't know.
Yeah, go on, give it a go.
Well, I also, from now until the rest of the show, let's keep the language family friendly. I really want to make my language better, and it's a constant thing. In the last couple of years, I've been really keep coming back to the thought, and I just can't do it. I've got a very potty mouth.
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
and I need to up my game. I need to up my game. I don't want to do a swear jar because that's for dickheads. See, you see, there you go. I just can't. Stop. So, between now and Paul Ross, let's make it a curse-free zone. That was a double there. A CFZ. CFZ is what we're gonna try and do. So, okay. But you can't just tell a curse to go away. It don't work like that.
Yeah, just do it. I've done things like that. Just don't. Go away and nothing. That's it. It's gone.
Go on, Kathy. Try.
That'll do, hex wise. Thanks very much.
Okay. Still no calls of note. Still no vibe. Nobody but vibe vampires.
Hang on. What do you mean no calls of note? I'm phoning.
What do you hate me?
I don't.
I can. All right. So I won't. I'll do. All right. Okay. I won't.
Why do you hate me?
Oh, God, don't.
Okay, all right.
Why do you hate me?
Oh, no, that's worse.
Why do you hate me?
Just don't play it all together.
Okay, hang on a minute. All right, I won't play it all together. Whoa, that is terrifying.
God.
You know he's going to phone up sooner or later.
Oh, he sent me some emails last night, which I retweeted one of them, and I thought, yeah, do you know what? Let's let him get on with his life of blaming other people for his problems.
He was doing so well, too.
He was, but here's the thing, right? And I wish him the best of luck with his sobriety. Of course I do, yeah. He cannot pin... I think he's implying in the emails... Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but because we made a joke on the show when he came on, as we often do when we see a caller, we'll go to the caller and we'll say something a little bit rude about them. I will say something a little bit rude about them. And I said, speaking of hanging, here's someone I'd hang, is Alistair. Obviously a joke. I'm not going to hang the guy. I wouldn't hang him. I would poison him. Joke. It's a joke, right? Obviously it's a joke, right? The implication seems to be that comment is what caused him to pick up the booze again. No, it ain't. It's not. And I'm really confident in the fact that it's not. What causes anyone, he said, moving away from the specific, what causes anyone to pick up the booze again is that person, is themselves. What caused me to pick up the drugs again was me. It was me. It was the disease, but it was ultimately me. And I would blame it. I could blame it on my mum. I could blame it on Kath. I could blame it on work. Whatever. It's me. There's no reason apart from me. So that's his reason. And I wish him the very best of luck. But also... we don't have to take his abuse, you know. We don't.
No.
His abuse is not his. And give it back to him.
Yeah. Well, I had to have a go at my mum yesterday.
Oh, hang on. Sorry. I pressed the wrong button. Go on. What happened?
Well, I had to have a go at her yesterday because she did something that was quite, I thought, was really, really shitty of her.
Okay. Well, come on. What did we say about raising our language, gang?
Well, you're talking about you, but...
No, all of us. Come on.
All right. Okay. She posted something on Facebook having a go at people because they hadn't supported her as much as she'd have hoped.
Oh.
And then posted a picture of a bottle of Teachers.
There you go.
And a glass.
There we go.
And I just said to her, you can't do that to people, you know, just because they haven't supported you as much as you'd like to think. Maybe they've got their own stuff going on, you know?
Yeah.
So,
but also,
classy move doing it on Facebook.
No, but also,
exactly.
Fair play for calling her out. But she can do that if she wants. She can post that picture if she wants. Here's the thing: we're powerless over people, places, and things. And if that's what she wants to do, you can call her out and say that. Do you know what? That's not a great thing, and this is what I think. But that's what she chooses to do. Then that's what she chooses to do. You know, we're not responsible for the actions that these people decide to take, and the sooner that addicts and alcoholics and people, you know, realise that we are, I am responsible for my own actions, they are responsible for their own actions, then that's it. Then they're taking this. I don't know what I'm saying. Sally, say hello to Susan.
Hello, Susan.
Hello, darling. Were you listening last night?
I was, and I felt really, really sorry for you. Have you managed not to today?
Oh God, yes. It was never sort of every day. I mean, sometimes we'd leave it for weeks, but I just
2 weeks,
Catherine,
huh?
Catherine, longer than that. But Catherine gave me some. Is Catherine listening?
I am.
You said
2 weeks. Catherine,
it's
more than that. Stop it, Ian.
You said 2 weeks. I can only go by what you say.
It's been more than that.
Well,
shout.
You said two. I'm not making you do anything. You're making yourself shout. Because you're getting things wrong.
Let's all take a deep breath. Come on. We're all friends.
No.
Nice and deep, Susan. Nice and deep.
Yes, all right. Oh. No, where's that young lady gone?
I'm here. You're right.
Thank you, sweetheart. Yeah, thank you, sweetheart.
No, notice nobody thought she meant Catherine.
Catherine gave me some very good advice. She was really clever, and she said, you know, don't say to yourself, right, I'm never going to do it again. Just try and be strong, and if I meet him again, just say to myself, not today. I won't do it today. Yeah. And just wean it off gradually, you know?
Yeah.
Wean it off gradually?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wean it off gradually.
Wean my dependency off it. I didn't feel like it today at all.
No.
I haven't felt like it for a few days.
No.
I mean, I'm having the same problem.
Really?
Same problem. I'm trying.
What, same bloke?
No, not the same bloke. Well, I hope not.
No. Well, it could. You never know. No.
Yeah, just trying to stop myself
Do you feel that it's a bit of an addiction with you, with this man? You know, a sexual addiction.
Not a sexual addiction. No.
What,
well,
I don't think so much of the music because he might be listening right now.
Do you just like him as a person? Do you like him as a person?
If I was to be honest with you, I would say yeah. I'm probably in love with him. So.
Oh
yeah.
God.
And I'm struggling not to text him or anything. So.
I know.
But it's been 6 weeks. I'm doing well. So,
you are doing well. That's very, very. When you're emotionally involved, it's so hard.
I know.
It is hard. The love is. It's just.
So hard.
He's naughty, isn't he?
Not as naughty as Susan.
Well, stop it. Have you tried popping to Anne Summers or something and getting some sort of vibrator or something? Maybe that'll help you.
I've got one, darling, but I tell you, the best thing is for me to just...
She's smoothed off the edges.
I walked off... I'm not going to talk to you, Ian. You're just being horrible.
Ignore him.
Catherine, thank God we've got Catherine.
Yeah,
she's the same one, you know?
Yeah, she's good at giving advice.
Good for you, Catherine. Well done, sisters. Sisters are doing it for themselves, except they're not. They're relying on brothers.
Are you getting a hard on, Ian?
Sorry?
Are you getting hard?
No, I need attractive women for that.
Oh, now, come on.
We're all attractive. Oh. How do you know we're not?
I can tell by the voice. I can tell by the voice.
Oh, no.
It's a very annoying, unerotic voice.
What, my voice?
Yeah, too nasally for me.
Yeah, I'm nasal. I've got problems with my nose at the moment.
Well, I could fix it, but not interested.
Yes, but that... You never judge a book by its cover.
Well, it's not by its cover. It's by the audiobook, and I don't like it.
Fair enough. Each to their own.
Not that it matters, Susan, because you're a beautiful soul, and it doesn't matter. Yeah. But just out of interest, so I can get a picture in my mind.
Yes.
Which actress would play you in a movie... of your life?
Everybody says that on looks, I look like Cherry Lungi.
Oh.
And I don't like Cherry Lungi. I don't like
her. Which one's that?
The manageress.
Yeah.
Jinx. Catherine Boyle.
Right.
And also Kate Bush, when she was younger, she's put a bit of weight on now. Kate Bush.
Have you got flowing dark hair?
Kate Bush and Sherry London, very similar.
It's not as long now, I've cut it a bit, but it's dark. I haven't gone grey or anything.
And on your head?
Oh.
Stop it!
Very personal.
I know. I think I'll send Ian and Catherine a picture of my fufu and then it will settle them, won't it?
I've got a fufu of my own I can look at whenever I like, but good for you.
I will. And it'll stop him, won't it? It'll stop
him something.
you really don't have to.
We don't want any unsolicited V-Pix.
No.
Am I talking to Sally? Are you Sally, darling?
No, I'm Ian Lee. Nice to meet you. Hello.
No, I want this young lady to name. I'm terrible with names. Is it Sally?
It is Sally, yes.
Sorry, there you are. I've got something right. Oh. Now, isn't she lovely? Isn't she nice? I think you're lovely. Yes.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice of you to say. I think you're lovely.
So when, Susan, when do you think you're going to be in the Hall of Mirrors again?
Oh no, not today. No, I don't ever want to go in there. I should never have gone in. I knew him a few years ago. I had a fling with him and I pulled out because he was so horrible.
You pulled out? I'm confused.
Yeah, I did.
What exactly were the two of you doing? What were you wearing? You pulled out?
Yes.
How did you do that? Were you wearing a...
I was wearing... He asked me to go along to him and would I wear... I've never done this before. He said, would you wear fishnet stockings?
I thought you were
going to
say something else.
Yeah,
and,
me too.
And what did you think I was going to say?
I can't say it on the radio.
Can't say it.
Fishnet stockings.
Anyway, so he asked you to dress up or dress down.
Yes, and dress up, and I put these things on. And I thought, why am I doing this? I've never done this before. It's just making me feel
It's just basically, Sally, it's just,
yeah,
it's just the only thing it's ever been is erotic and lust.
Yep.
That's all it was.
Has he got like mirrors all around the room?
Well, yes, he has, and I've been told, as someone who knows him thinks he's got a video video camera.
What, and his videos?
I know.
You?
I know. No videos ever, because he's got loads of women in there, hasn't he? In and out. Videos himself doing it with all these girls.
Dirty boy. That's not. That's not pleasant.
Seriously, Sally.
He might have done it with you though.
Oh no. Oh, I know. Well, he's got my he's got a picture of my business area on his phone.
What, your office?
No, on his phone.
But he came to where you work and took a picture of your desk.
I haven't got an office.
You said your business area. Oh, sorry, I'm so sorry. I'm being very slow on the uptake.
Foo-foo.
Unlike him. Yes.
The foo-foo.
Yeah, I call it Mary. I think that's a nicer one. Yeah.
Mary, do you prefer that to foo-foo?
Yeah, I was referred to it as my Mary.
All right, okay. Well, apparently it is Elizabethan time, so I called it a hinny.
Oh, a hinny.
Yeah.
Okay.
A hinny. I think it's HINNY in Elizabethan times, yeah.
Isn't that what Geordies call you if they're being nice?
I don't know.
I think they do say
that. I don't know any Geordies.
Oh. Thank God.
Thank God.
Well, they'd be calling you that all the time. You'd be quite offended.
Well, Susan, it's Sally. It's always great to talk.
Yeah.
And
Ian's getting bored, and he wants to blow us out.
I want to what?
Now,
if I blow you out, who's going to pull out? You or me? You're mixing up. The genders.
Well, you're going to pull out, aren't you? Because you want to blow us out.
Okay.
If I pull out, will you blow us out?
Could we all withdraw at the same time? Would that be all right? Let's do that.
Yeah.
As friends.
So on the count of three, we're all going to pull out, okay? And can I just check, is anyone getting blown out? Susan, are you going to blow anyone out tonight?
Not today.
Okay. So at the count of three, we're all going to pull out and put our phones down. Ready?
Thank you.
Okay.
Ready, Susan?
Three, two, one. Bang.
You've got to put your phones down.
No one pulled out.
No one pulled out. We're all in. We're still in.
That's a mean trick.
We are still in. We're locked in.
You can't do that. You can't say you're going to pull out and then leave it in.
We're like pigs.
Yeah, that is a bit of
I don't want to go off the phone because I've only got to go to bed and I'm bored. I want you to talk to me.
Well, I'm not allowed to talk to you.
What do you mean you're not allowed to talk to me? Why?
You keep telling me to shut up.
Well, you keep being rude.
I'm not rude.
I only said it twice.
Is that all? Gosh. Okay. Well, Susan, nice talking to you. Bye.
Bye.
Sally, thanks very much.
Bye.
Catherine, can I cut you off if I click this?
No.
Balls.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Hiya, you're listening to the best of the late night alternative. I'm Catherine Boyle and I'm not here. This is a pre-record, so please don't call us. Tonight is all about just sitting back, relaxing and reminiscing about some of the great moments that we've had on this really special show. You never know who's listening. That's a lesson we learn time and time again, and it really is highlighted by this next call from a really unexpected person.
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee on air and off the leash on Talk Radio.
What on earth are you showing me? A bare arse.
Instagram, right? They get festive, and the latest thing, apparently, is to barbelise your bum or make your boobs into puddings.
I don't like Christmas pudding. I put some cream over them.
Oh, you animal.
Okay, let's go to Dwayne. Good evening, Dwayne.
Hello, are you all right, Ian?
I'm all right, Dwayne. How are you, mate?
Oh. I'm good, pal. I just want to say, for the last 2 years, you've carried me a long way from the dark path.
Oh. Are you a Satanist?
No. I've just been released on a license, obviously a life license from prison.
Oh. Dwayne, can you do us a favour? Can you turn the radio off?
Okay, hold on.
Cheers, man. Because I want to.
I'm in a,
Go on. I'm in an octal duct, so I've got a radio up and I've got a TV, so I'm just turning it down.
Yeah, just turn it down, because otherwise it gets a bit confusing because of the delay. Go on. So what's happened?
I got released today to an hostel. After 17 and a half years in custody. Uh-oh. I've got last 2.5. And from when I first... In fact, when I got to light, we're on the... I'm a celebrity.
Yeah, all right. So, hang on. So, what, you were in custody for 17 years?
In fact, Ian, I got remanded on the 5th of the 9th, year 2001, just before the September 11th attacks.
Well, so that it means you weren't involved in those, and that's something. You were out of the police inquiries for that. So
yeah,
that's...
no. I did something very wrong, which...
Oh, 17 years.
I have to live with it.
Yeah.
But I did something wrong. I got a life sentence, and they released me today in an hostel.
So today you got out. You said this is your first day out of prison.
In an hostel. This is the first time I've listened to you as a free man, even though I'm in an hostel.
And you chose to call us, man. Thank you.
Lads listen to you in prison. Now we're in Wakefield Prison. All the lads listen to you in there.
Yes, Wakefield Prison!
Big up yourselves.
Listen, guys, trust me. Get through Christmas, everyone in Wakefield Prison. I'm coming up there next year. I'm going to bring some drones. I'm going to get some good gear in there for you. We're going to get some files. We're going to break you out! Wakefield Prison's going to break!
That's how I got to listen to you, because it says, listen, Blaine, listen to Ian Lee. Late night talk show. Talk radio.
Yeah.
So did it in my debut. I thought, what the sad. Obviously, other stations like, what's it called? Same station, but on a Saturday night, badass girls and all that crap. And I thought, what? This is a great station.
Yeah, yeah. So, hang on a minute. Let me ask. So, this is your first day out, man. This is a huge day. And we're going to step back in a second. But how do you feel? The moment you step out of Nick for the first time, I've got no idea what that's like. Is it overwhelming? Is it exciting? Is it kind of nothing? How does it feel?
Well, to be honest, Ian, when I got released, I had to get escorted to approved premises by police officers.
Right.
So they dropped me off at premises, did me induction there, showed me my room, then I went out, and it's like whew.
Wow.
And it's a shock.
Are you allowed to now walk out of that hostel if you want, or have you got like a curfew, or do you have to tell people?
Yeah, I've got a curfew from 10 a.m. till 7 a.m. in the morning. But apart from that,
so 7 o'clock in the morning, you could go out and go for a walk.
Yeah.
For the first time in 17 years.
Yeah.
How does that feel, man?
It's like, to be honest, it scared the life out of me today. Like, I could have gone out that tomorrow, but I didn't. I was sat and I thought, can't get my head around it, to be honest.
Oh, I bet. Isn't that interesting? First day out and you stayed in.
I bet the world feels massive.
It does. Not only that, I see all these, like, new cars.
Smartphones.
These, like, super space buses and what.
Super space buses! Where have they released him? all right, listen, I've got to ask the question. 17 years, man, that is a long time. What did you do?
I don't like to reflect on it, Lee, but... I got a life sentence for 15-year sentence with a 15-year type, but it's 17 and a half.
So that's a murder, right?
I don't like to reflect on it.
All right, no, listen, all right. But I have to ask, just because some people go, well, you've got to, so I've asked, all right, and we've got a vague idea. How are you feeling about staying on the straight and narrow?
Oh, yeah, listen, I'm not a robber, I'm not a thief. What I did for a reason. But at the time, it was the wrong reason. I suffered consequences for it. And I probably will for the rest of my life.
Ah, man.
So I don't like robbing, I don't like stealing. And like the judge says, I'm not a risk to nobody else, it was just a one-off. Yeah. I got a payback, that's all I did.
Yeah. Well, you see, I have to say, it's all you did. You know, it's there were obviously people that were severely impacted by your actions. It sounds like you're aware of that severe impact. And I don't want to dwell on that, but, you know. All right. Well, listen, man, this is an exciting... This is it. This is the turning point of your life. You can now... Well, you can now go in any direction you want. What have you got any idea of what you want to do?
To be honest, I haven't. It's like, obviously I've got restrictions. I have to keep sound on every 2 hours of curfew, so they make sure in daytime that I'm not out of that, so they're monitoring me.
overwhelming, to be honest. When I first smelled that tarmac, in fact, I seen a green field when I went car. I thought, I just want to get out of Cairns, step on that green grass. Because when in Wakefield, there's no green grass, it's all concrete.
Well, tomorrow, why don't you go and step in some green grass?
I'll eat it tomorrow.
Don't eat it! Probably got dog shit all over it.
That's not changed.
You don't want to do that, man, but go out. Go out and be with nature tomorrow if you can.
I was ringing Seth the last couple of years. I was tuning into you and I thought, every single night, from 10 till what, you made me smirk and smile before going to bed.
Wicked, thank you. Hey, listen, Dwayne, I'm slightly speechless because I don't know how to... This is an amazing call, man. This is an amazing call, and I really appreciate the fact that we helped you and other people in prison. That means a lot. I really appreciate the fact that on your first day you phoned us up. Yeah, go on.
Wakefield lads, I know they're all... you know what Wakefield's got a nickname called Monster Mansion, which is full of monsters. Very, very, very bad people.
Oh, God.
But they all tune into you and listen to you every single night. They all do when we get camped up, all for stay for lockdown, double check for roll check for 9, and they all tune in for your 10. They do. I know it sounds bad, because obviously not all monsters, but it's Monster Mansion, but they all listen
Monster
to you.
Mansion. Well, hello, Monster Mansion. Dwayne, would you mind giving us a call if you're around? He's got a curfew. Maybe Monday night and just letting us know. No, hang on, we're on Monday. Give us a call later in the week, maybe even tomorrow if you want, and just let us know how you're settling in or settling out and how it's going for you and stuff.
Yeah, I will do.
Give us a call tomorrow if you get the chance, Dwayne. Otherwise, we'll speak to you later in the week.
Okay, Doug. Thank you.
All right, man. Did you call me Duck?
Yeah.
Call me Duck.
Yeah, he must be a Nottingham lad.
I'm gonna find him. Thank you, Dwayne. 17 years, that is something, that is a very naughty crime, and I don't want to in any way demean what he did. He said, well, all I did was this. Well, all you did, I would imagine, had a very, very severe impact on at least one person and probably quite a lot of people, quite possibly a murder. Sounds like, we're all making up kind of our own stories as to what it was there. So not in any way justifying what he did. It's a weird one, because I'm so pleased that people listen to us in prison. I often thought that they might do, but I was never quite sure. Now we have proof that they do.
And as if they hadn't suffered enough.
Yeah, shut your face. and I'm really grateful for that phone call. I really wish Dwayne the very, very best of luck, man. Yeah. Trying to rebuild your life after that. But then part of me was thinking, well, supposing it was murder, let's assume. What if the wife of that guy that got killed was there, or the daughter or the mum was listening to this and thinking, well, hang on a minute, you're giving that scumbag... It's tough, isn't it?
Here's the deal. Everyone gets to call us.
Yeah, you're right.
Whatever Dwayne's done, justice system says that he's out. And he's got to become part of society. And that sounds like it's a really daunting thing. I mean, it's only day one. And he feels like a spaceman. Mm. Everyone gets to ring.
Matty says, gosh, what a change from Susan's back doors to Dwayne, who served a life sentence in prison. It is, isn't it?
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Hi, you're listening to the best of the late night alternative. We were really lucky this year. We got to interview some brilliant people. But I've got to say, this next guy was a real highlight for both of us. We were like kids at Christmas. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Jeff Goldblum.
Could you do me a favor, Sarah?
Yes, anything.
Could we take it just one more time?
From the top?
No, from that ending. I love that ending.
Before we get finished, we'll make the town roar.
We're just like Michael Corleone. We'll settle old scores.
Oh, then we'll talk to Vitero and dress up like whores.
Life is gonna be a real wild week. For tomorrow, the shadow and me. In Jurassic Park, scary in the dark.
I am scared that I'll get eaten.
Oh, Sarah, don't be scared of that.
Fellas!
Right, just calm down for a second. We're recording now.
So this, calm.
Okay. Just slow down.
Are you nervous?
I'm not nervous. Why would I be nervous? I've got nothing to be nervous about. I'm just going to go and do an interview. This is with Jeff Goldblum, and that is nothing to be nervous about. I'm not nervous. I've done so many interviews. I've interviewed loads of people.
Here's the thing. He talks quite quickly, so if you're going to talk like that, this is going to be tricky.
OK, we are at... Now, these are the famous BBC Maid of Our studios, which I think they're closing down.
Yeah, I think I've heard that too.
OK, after today they're closing it down. This is... My sister used to live on that road there. That's Elgin Avenue.
Good to know.
She stole... I think we can say this. She stole one of those road signs that says Elgin Avenue.
OK. So you know for sure then that she lived on Elgin Avenue?
I know, yes. So we're going to go and interview Jeff Goldblum. This is a weird one.
Yeah.
For us.
I don't think we've ever brought presents for a guest before, but we really, really want to be his friend.
Oh, yeah, because Jeff's gonna give us his phone number at the end of this. Hey, guys, hang out, cool.
I did bring biscuits.
Laced with LSD.
Shh.
Jeff's going, bye-byes. Well, I need a pee. Let's go in. This is the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, Maida Vale Studios. Let's go in.
Hello,
are
you here to interview Jeff Goldblum with Zena?
Ian Lee and Catherine Boyle.
Good sign.
No, it's not, is it?
Catherine Boyle.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, this is when we find out it's all been an elaborate hoax.
Oh,
there we go.
There we are. Brilliant.
Thank you so much.
Do we just loiter here? We don't know.
We can go down if you want.
I don't know where we're going. Which...
I'll direct you down.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, now, Scott, then. You go down, take the green fire exit.
Yep.
Left. Follow your nose downstairs. You'll see Studio 3.
Follow your nose. All
Thank
right.
You.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Right.
This is exciting. This place obviously is closing down because...
They don't give a stuff.
They've just sent us off on our own. Let's have a little wander. Look at that, though. Look at that. Look at that. There's an orchestra in there. Mate. That's incredible. That's incredible.
BBC Symphony Orchestra.
Yes, man. Oh, by the way, I'm going to boost the levels now. So the levels will be louder than they were earlier.
Thank you. Why are you doing that? Because we're whispering.
Okay. Hey, I'm Jeff Goldblum. I'm pleased to meet you. Every interview I've read with him, he comes across as so charming and delightful.
Well,
imagine if this is the one where he snaps. You bastards, I don't want to talk about this. Why are you talking about the fly?
Why is he suddenly from New York instead of Pittsburgh?
Because when he gets angry, his New York accent comes out.
All right.
Hang on, stairway to studio.
Said it to the fire exit.
Okay.
Didn't he?
This is the problem now, is we are going to get so lost.
Studio 4, Studio 5.
Okay, well, we want Studio 3. Picture of John Peel. There's the Beatles, look. Hello, Beatles. The Beatles recorded programme.
Is it not this, MV3?
No. Is it? This is why we should have gone back the way we came. Well, let me just check here. Now we're late. And we know whose fault that is.
You're an outrage.
This is totally going to be wrong. Yeah, what a surprise. Totally wrong. Well, let's go through this door anyway. Zena, recall. That was a torturous route.
Hello.
This is Catherine.
Lovely to meet you.
I see you're right.
Let's see if we can find Jeff.
Okay. This
is a nice place, isn't it?
It's gorgeous.
Can't believe they're going to knock all this down.
It smells a bit old. Wooden.
You love old wood, do you?
It smells like school.
You like old wood?
Yeah. Not that old.
Come on. Come on, you love it. I can hear Jeff Goldblum's voice behind that curtain.
No, you can't.
Yeah. Totally.
Like if we just get some seats here, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Fine, as long as everyone's quiet.
No, I don't need you quiet. Yeah? The Atmos is okay. Sort of calm.
You're in matching jackets.
Uh-oh. This is awkward. It's true. Jeff Goldblum.
So nice to meet you.
Brother, so nice to meet you.
Look, a brown corduroy jacket. What's happening?
What are the chances of that?
This is the Under the Great Minds Think Alike file.
This is Catherine, my co-host.
Pleased to meet you, Jeff.
So pleased to meet you, Catherine.
How are you doing?
Thank you so much for doing this. I'm doing well, thank you. You guys?
Yeah, good. Are you ready now? Are you doing stuff?
I wasn't doing... Let me bring my water over here.
Bring water, yeah.
Yeah, so I can just stay hydrated while we do this. This looks like me. Against one.
We're going to destroy you, Jeff.
I hope so. That's what I've been hoping for. So good, good, good. I want to hear everything. This is for. Tell me what this is.
This
for.
Is for Talk Radio.
Yes.
We do a late night, kind of vaguely psychedelic, esoteric phone-in show, where we kind of celebrate stuff.
Yes.
Instead of this thing that a lot of British and American radio does of causing fear and panic, we kind of celebrate beauty and art and music.
Well, that's
life.
That's beautiful.
And here's a bit I think you're going to dig. It's mostly improvised. We don't set anything up apart from things like this.
Let's improvise up a storm. Having said that, watch me crash and burn. But you
finish doing what you're doing.
Well, this is the most inconsiderate thing. My two sons, 3 and 1, are not have never had any kind of thing. I want to see. Wait. Oh, here. So, Ian Lee.
Hello.
Yes. Look at this. Performance ends. You will be remanded, made a veil. I didn't even know this studio. Do you know? Well, we'll talk about it
this is a famous studio. I think they're knocking it down, though.
That's what I just heard.
It's awful. Thank you.
And it's Ian and I-A-I-N.
Scottish.
And Catherine.
Just the regular way.
With a K.
K. Mm-hmm. And what's your last name?
Boyle.
Boyle. Mm-hmm. Like Susan Boyle.
So many ways.
Irish.
Yeah, well, yeah. Irish extraction, but no one I can remember.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Catherine. Well, we'll talk about everything. Are you ready? How long do we have?
I think we've got 2 or 3 hours we booked with you.
I hope so.
That's about half past, so.
That's perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Oh, we've got 25 minutes. Perfect. We can do anything. Look how colorful and everything. Catherine, well, thank you for doing this. That's
thank you for doing this, man.
My pleasure. Now, are you kidding?
I love this album.
You heard it?
I listened to it, yeah, I've listened to it. I've just been handed a physical copy, but I listened to it via streaming.
Really? Yes. Did you hear it, Catherine?
I heard some bits, but not enough.
Let me see, and I've never seen, actually...
No, that's the first time you've seen your own record.
I have not seen, you don't want to break...
Break the seal, break it.
This is me, then you're beholding me breaking... That's the first?
You're in.
And I have never beheld this part of it. I've seen sort of a mock-up of... something like that, but I have never seen.
There it is.
This is me looking at it for the first time. Nope. And this will ostensibly play our songs. We're led to believe so. And you liked it.
The duet with Sarah Silverman.
You did? Well, I love her very much. Yeah, thanks. We had fun doing it. I had fun doing the whole darn thing. But I've known her for a while. I hosted Saturday Night Live right after the first Jurassic Park in 93. And then again a little bit. But she was, I think, one of the writers when I originally did it. And I met her. She was young. And then we've stayed in touch. We've done a couple of different things together. And then as part of her live show that she does regularly at Largo, if you're in Los Angeles, she invited me one time to be part of it. She has special guests, so-called. And I had already worked up a version of this Me and My Shadow, which you may recognize from Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis. Yeah. I think they cooked it up originally. We sort of adapted some specialty lyrics, and we did it. You can look us up rehearsing the first time we ever encountered it at her apartment.
Yeah.
When I set up my camera like this, I'll bet you could find that on YouTube. Anyway, when it came time to do this, and the great Larry Klein was our producer, And he was saying, I think, having seen this Rockwell show, which I'll tell you about, I think this is where you might want to focus the so-called album on. And I said, well, how about singers? We usually have a singer there. Well, let's make a list. And da-da-da-da. And he brought us Imelda May and Haley Reinhardt, who are just brilliant. And I said, well, how about Sarah Silverman? He said, yes, yes, that's a good idea. That'll capture some of the fun of what you do. And maybe the two of you can do something that's kind of fun. And so we did that. And she came, I suggested it to her. She said, yay, I want to do it. And then she showed up at my house with Larry sitting there and me at my piano in my little guest house. And we ran through it once or twice. And that was it. And then on the day, we did that.
It's magic. On the day, it's that magic that you can only get in a live performance where just everything hits at the right moment. It's joyful.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Well, I agree. I mean, I'm happy that that's how it hits your ear, but it was joyful for us doing it. And the whole thing was like that. And that's what Larry wanted to capture, because I've been doing this just for the pure fun of it for 30 years now, out and about and at Rockwell for, you know, a while. I'll tell you the whole, you know, birth of that. But, you know, I just do it for fun, and we do have fun, and people who come there, a lot of them don't know the jazz songs that we're playing, and we have the responsibility of introducing them to Thelonious Monk and Charles Mingus and some of these songs, but we do it, and I think in a sophisticated way. I play with great guys, and they help me do a version of it that has integrity and validity and sophistication. They're spectacular, and I'm learning from them all the time. That's one of the thrills that I get out of it. And the people, but we do it in a fun way. And that's one of the things that Larry said. He said, I think what I'm seeing here at Rockwell is how jazz used to be at a certain time when it was a social kind of, you know, inflaming, sexy music, and that's kind of what we're doing. He said, I think we could capture that if we do it at Capitol Records, where I know I can get a beautiful recording of it, but we set up a live bunch of people.
So it's done in the studio, but you've set it up like a supper club.
We put a couple hundred chairs for a couple, 200-300 people there, and it was like a supper club, and people came, and we did what we do, basically, every week.
I know some of these songs. I'm not a jazz head.
I was going to say, this sounds like the ultimate introduction to jazz. Yeah. This is something that he's been looking for.
Because we're not jazz people. I'm kind of pop and rock.
And you're feeling like you need jazz in your life at this point.
I'm getting to an age when I think jazz...
Well, you're still a very young man. 25 is an accomplishment. That's a big... A quarter of a century is a big deal. You have a long way to go. I love that lovely soft pink, baby pink sweater. I think you call it a jumper.
You call it a jumper.
Jumper, yeah, yes.
Isn't it so funny?
A jumper to an American, though, is a pinafore dress.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. A jumper? That's oh, yes, a jumper, a little jumper. And we have jumper cables. Do you know what that is?
Jump leads.
Yeah, in the car if the battery goes down. Yeah. But what were we saying? The fascinating thing that I've forgotten.
For a young man like me.
Now, that's you. Yes, yes. well, a lot of people, some people I say, you know, I play jazz. You like jazz? They go, jazz, I don't know, you know, but da-da-da. And, you know, maybe they've had an encounter with something a little out of their league or something. But, yes, it's a very few people who walk away from what we do, unless they're not telling me, who don't say, gee, that was a blast.
Because your music sounds like a good time.
Well, we have a good time. I think it's pretty good.
Give me an album, apart from this one, after this one, that I should go out and buy as an introduction to jazz. What should be my second jazz record?
Well, you know, you're a jazz. You know everything about jazz.
I do
Catherine.
Not know really? Anything about jazz.
Well, these guys, the band behind me with whom I just played, they would know everything because they went to college for it, and they probably
jazz
know
college.
Jazz college. I know. But I'll tell you, me, you know, I took lessons when I was a kid in Pittsburgh, and my dad, the doctor, they had four kids. I had three brothers and sisters. He loved jazz. He didn't play, but he brought home, at the time it was just come out, Errol Garner. He was from Pittsburgh, like I was, and he said, listen to this. And he was a doctor, but he went, listen to how that guy pauses. It's so brave. And then he goes and he did a kind of scat version of what he heard Errol Garner doing. He went, bo pa po pa po pa po pa.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
So, you know, and I was like, wow. My dad's interested in this. This is something. And I, you know, so maybe, you know, Errol Garner, I'll tell you, that wouldn't be a bad place to start. He has a lot of things. I have on my iPhone right now a song by him. You'd look it up. called El Dorado,
yeah,
that these days, if I'm doing a photo shoot or something, I say, hey, put on that in a, put that on a loop and just keep playing it because it gets me going. But he's a untrained, he doesn't read music, Errol Garner, as the story goes, I think, but he is a genius and he plays beautifully and uniquely joyfully. It's really something. And plays all those standards that you have heard, Tony Bennett and Frank Sinatra. Yes.
He spoke about jazz. He compared jazz to comedy, and he says the similarities between jazz and comedy is you hold the beat until the very, very last moment, and then you hit the beat. And he said that's the same kind of rule for comedy. You deliver the punchline at the very last moment. Not too late, otherwise you lose the rhythm, but not too early. And he's in the same with jazz. Does that kind of make sense to you?
I've never heard anything like that. I love it. I loved Dudley Moore. I met him once, you
did
know.
You really?
Yes,
yeah,
I
he
did.
He was a great pianist.
I know he was. I love him playing. Well, we were in a car at some event. I bet I can't even remember what it was, but we were being, you know, taken in a car. And we shared a car once. And I was like, Dudley Moore, because I saw him in on Broadway with Peter Cook doing one of their shows, which I loved to pieces. These days you can go on YouTube and see many of their bits. He was just brilliant. And, you know, the reason I'm an actor, one of the first experiences that I had, my parents took us to see a theater, children's theater first, and that's when I kind of went, well, what are they doing with this Beauty and the Beast and da-da-da-da-da. And then when I was a middle teenager, after already I need to be an actor thinking, they took us to a couple of other shows that came and did a road version of a New York appearance at production, and one of them was Beyond the Fringe. And for those Dudley Moore fans, they'll know that he and Peter Cook and Alan Bennett and
who's the fourth
you know,
the doctor,
yes, who's the Shakespearean scholar,
Jonathan Miller
who has Jonathan many Miller. great you know, things that you can look up, and he's talking with erudition about one kind or one thing or another. Yeah, they did it originally. I didn't see them, but I saw a road company of Beyond the Fringe, and which I think they wrote they all wrote, and that made me, you know, I was like, I gotta do this. I think that night, in fact, I broke out in a kind of sweat sitting there thinking, I'm going to at some point uncontrollably jump up and join in.
Wow.
I'm not going to be able to help myself. That really.
And just a moment almost.
Well, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
Talk about sexy. Now, is it Come On in My House?
Yes.
Is that the one about I'm going to give you candy?
Yes.
That song is filth.
Oh, yeah, I know that song.
It's
pure filth.
The young lady that sings it.
Imelda May is a great, great artiste.
It's filth.
Well, it's deeply, it's erotic, but in a refined way, but deeply naughty. Yes, and only by suggestion and inference. Wait till you see. Have you seen us do it together? Because
no.
I'm playing piano. They filmed us doing this.
Right.
And you see me. It's only the second time I've seen her do it, and she's kind of doing it to me, you know. She's going, I'm going to give you pomegranates, and she does some things like that. And I'm like,
it's an incredible version.
And I'm looking at her on the film, and I'm going, I just become very still and deeply, you know, inflamed, I think, is the idea. Yeah.
May we be so bold as to tell you our favorite thing of yours?
You can
that you've
be
ever
bold
done.
As you want.
Portlandia.
Oh, my God. I love Portlandia so much.
I love it myself. I love doing it. Well, first of all, Fred Armisen, Carrie Brownstein,
genius.
John Kreisel is one of the geniuses behind that, who directed them and who gave me as much freedom as anyone with whom I've improvised, so-called, on camera. He was like, no, turn the camera on. Just you don't even have to hit this tent pole idea, and doesn't have to be this event. Just talk about this and talk about that. It was kind of like that. It was really fun, and they're brilliant. I liked it. And then they rewrote it in editing.
Yeah,
they got some interesting bits, and it came out cute. Didn't it?
It's lovely, isn't
love
it?
Love it so much.
Yeah,
so
thanks,
much.
Andy.
I was going to thank you as well for the tall guy.
Thank you. You know, I'm doing the Graham Norton show this week, and who's going to be on it with me on the couch is Rowan Atkinson.
Oh, wow.
Really?
And I haven't seen him
for
a couple of decades.
Yeah.
Yes, that was Emma Thompson's first movie. Yeah. I like that movie, too. You know, it was Richard Curtis's first movie script, I believe. It was originally called Camden Town Boy. because it was kind of his story, and I think he's from Camden, not if I'm remembering rightly. But then they say, well, let's get an American actor in it. Well, who? Well, how about this Jeff Goldblum? And then they called it The Tall Guy, mm-hmm. me being freakishly tall. Yes. Freakishly tall.
You're about the same, aren't you?
Really?
Jeff.
Well, we're the same. I look up to you. You tower over me.
I get really excited. And if I'm out with Kath, if I see people that are taller than me, because that's what it must feel like to be normal.
There is a silent exchange between us, and he sort of tries to position himself next to them just so I can check.
Ah, yes. Well, how about you and I? You and I are what are you,
6'4"?
6'4". I'm 6'4".
This is great.
Oh, are you?
Should we fight?
Sounds
make
like a
love?
Challenge.
One of those two.
Everything at once. All at once. Yeah, I love to. You ever get next to somebody who's 7 feet tall?
Yeah,
or
that's a joy.
Yeah.
It's
or a,
joy.
A lady who's 6'7" or something?
A couple of times.
I know.
Powerful.
Very powerful.
You're doing live shows. I think they may have sold out.
That's what I hear. We're doing a couple in late November and at Cadogan Hall. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
I've heard different things, but Cadogan Hall.
Yeah, that works.
Okay,
that works.
Cadogan Hall. Anyway, it's part of the London Jazz Festival.
Which is great. They have some great acts on.
I'll bet they do. I hope we
say it like that, for God's sake.
But they have some great acts. And you. No, you're included in the greatness.
Well,
of
you
the
know, I hope we're worthy of it, really. I'm a humble student, and this is a humble offering.
What can people expect from the show? What's it going to be?
Well, let me see. Well, this band, I'll tell you.
Who's in the band? Let's name check those guys. Or have I put you on the spot now?
Not at all. Joe Bagg is an organist who's an eighth degree black belt master. I mean, he's the sweetest guy on earth. Alex Frank is a young pal of mine, but a spectacular bass player.
Jeff is miming the instruments at the moment.
Yes, in case you didn't know. Well, you can't say the word goatee. If you ask somebody, what's a goatee? They'll say, you know, it's one of those things. Yeah. So he's the bass player. John Story is our great guitar player.
He uses all the neck by the looks of that.
I went up and down like Jimi Hendrix. I go up and down that neck. Then Kenny Elliott is our great, great drummer. And James King is our saxophonist, or our saxophonist, whatever you call it over here. He's with Fitz and the Tantrums, too. Okay. All these people have played with multiples, because luminaries. And that's the band. And singing with us, of course, on this tour. And Till Bronner. Till Bronner is somebody we hadn't played with. This is the trumpeter who plays on several tracks, is going to join us in Berlin and some of these gigs, because we're going to Berlin and Paris.
Fantastic.
And he was brought to us also by Larry Klein, but he's the foremost trumpeter in the world and plays several tracks there. Yeah. And then Imelda May, who lives over here, is going to join us and sing all of her songs with us, I think, from that album, and maybe more. She's fantastic. She's going to sing this Bitter Earth. Oh, heart, soulfully heartbreaking. And Come On to My House. Get ready. Hold on to your butts, as Sam Jackson says in Jurassic Park. And then, and that's it, you know. But, of course, on the record, we've got Haley Reinhardt, Sarah Silverman, unfortunately, doing other things. But that's the band, and maybe surprises. And I don't know what we're going to do, because at the gig, I'm always surprised. Our man, manager and director, John Mastro, gives me pieces of paper, and I read them, and then extemporize from them, free associate, and play with the audience, and do quizzes.
I tell you what I get from listening to you here, and listening to the record, is the joy that you have, the love you've got for this music, and for playing this music. It comes through.
Well, thank you.
Is this what you were listening to as a 10-year-old? Is it a 10-year-old Jeffrey Goldblum? What kind of stuff were you playing in your bedroom?
Jeffrey Lynn Goldblum, that's my whole name. My mom originally, I had a kid's album when I was very young from Danny Kaye. You remember Danny? You know Danny Kaye. There was this kid's album called Mommy, Give Me a Drink of Water. And then there was this other stuff. Remember, he did like Minnie the Moocher, this Cab Calloway, this kind of jazz stuff. Yeah. He could do anything. And he did this thing at the end of one song. I don't know what it is, but this bit of scat that I memorized and still remember. You want to hear it? It goes like this. That's Danny Kaye.
Magic.
And I still know that. And I do it for my son, and he kind of gets a kick out of it, you know.
Danny Kaye was great. The speed he could move his lips and his tongue was ridiculous.
He was something else. And then, you know, they showed us these, they gave us these Errol Garner records. Thelonious Monk was around, and I heard this interesting thing, and as you know, I've come to learn, and he's a big, you know, hero of mine. And what else? Then my brother, older brother, is a big jazz fan, brought home a Miles Davis, you know, Sketches of Spain album. He liked Brazilian music, too, and there was an Astro Gilberto Stan Getz record that he played over and over again that really got in amongst me, you know. Mm-mm, that kind of stuff.
Come on, my house, my house. Give you everything.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Hiya, you're listening to the best of the late night alternative. I'm Catherine Boyle. Ian Lee is normally here. Neither of us really are. This is a recording, so please don't call us. We're just enjoying some of the very best bits from 2018, and we hope that you'll enjoy them just as much as we have. Ian and I started working together on a breakfast show. So you imagine we were getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, hauling our backsides to work, and finishing at 10 o'clock. Now we start at 10 o'clock at the other end of the day, and we much prefer it. Not only do we get to doss around the house all day, we also get to have some really, really interesting conversations. There's something about this time of the night that makes people feel like they can open up so much more. And we really appreciate your trust. Listen to this.
When I was growing up, it was black and white. You were gay or you were straight. And actually, it ain't like that. It is. It's grey, you know. And I think everyone's a little bit gay, and some people are more straight than they. And I just wonder if in 20 years' time, kind of, it's not going to be seen as abnormal, in inverted commas, to, you know, one minute you're going out with a boy and that doesn't work, so the next partner's a girl, and that. I think that's going to become kind of the thing, and this gay and this straight thing is going to be a little bit less, you know, it's going to be a little bit less more of the extremes that we have.
All I want is for people to be able to do what they want.
Yes, right? Man.
As long as they're not
get
hurting
it
anyone.
Up there.
No, and also this awful thing of, you know, people carrying. There are adult men in their 50s and 60s who are waiting for their elderly mothers to die so they can come out and live their lifestyles, right? Lifestyles, like it's a choice. I long for a day when that doesn't need to happen anymore.
Well, yeah, exactly. I just, you know, just if it works putting it in that hole, put it in that hole. If it works putting it in the other hole, put it in that. If it works putting it in both holes, then grow two dicks and put them in both holes.
Some people don't want holes at all.
If you don't want a hole, then that's fine. Get a groove. Get a groove thang. Whatever works for you, man, as long as you just do it. Just get in bed. Everyone just get in bed and do it.
But there are also people who are completely not interested in anything at all.
Oh, those people are weird. I'm joking. It's a joke. It's a joke. It's a joke. Whatever works for you, man. Whatever works for you, you know. And if it's sex works for you and it works, great. And if it doesn't work for you and you don't like being touched, like you say, then that's... And if you're happy with that lifestyle, which is... lifestyle. If you're happy... Some people don't like being sexual and it's not a problem for them. They just don't like it. Fine, if that works for you, man. Everybody... I don't get this thing. Everybody should just be able to get on... and do what they want. As long as no one's getting hurt. No, again, unless that's your thing. As long as no one's doing anything against their will. Just get
and everyone's
on with
grown
it.
Up.
Just get on with it, man. Yeah. Get on with it. Get it up there.
That's that sorted, everyone.
Thank you very much indeed. Let's go to Tony.
Hello.
Hello, Tony. What can we do for you this evening, please?
Right, I'm just going to carry on with the subject that you're talking about.
Yes, man.
Right?
Get in there. Come on, let's have it.
Right, well, I finished with my missus back in March.
Yep.
And it's got nothing to do with where I am now and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I've always wanted to dress, and I'm in my late 40s now.
Yeah.
And I've never did anything about it. I've got kids and all stuff like that, and I'm so scared and all that sort of rubbish. And since I've been living on my own, I decided, well, why can't I? Why can't I do it?
Yeah.
So I started doing it, starting getting dressed, and haven't done anything with a man or a woman yet since I've been single. Nothing's happened yet.
Yeah.
And I decided
last weekend that I was going to tell my daughter. She's 21.
Oh, mate, that must have been terrifying.
It was the scariest thing in my life that I have ever done.
I bet it was.
I've been meaning to call you for months and months and months and talk about it, and I just haven't. But I thought, I told her, and she went, "Dad, why haven't you told me in the past?"
Oh.
Yes!
She said, "I know. It's obvious."
It's obvious.
Is it really that obvious? She went, "Yeah." And she said, "Well, now that I know," she said, "we're going shopping."
Oh, no, you're joking! You've done a good job there, Tony.
Oh, no. There's a lot more to come, yeah.
Go on.
I ended up going to Blackpool this week for the very first time.
Yeah.
And I went around the gay area and stuff like that, and I met loads of people. I was dressed. And you know what? I had an amazing time. I was out in my shell. And if people looked at me, I didn't care. I think I looked actually quite convincing.
Mm.
So I was all right with that. So I've just come back from Blackpool today after a few days. But the thing is, this is where I am getting a bit worried now. I've still got to tell my 14-year-old son.
Okay, okay.
And that is where I really am bricking it, sort of thing. I know he's not going to be anything bad, but I just haven't had a chance to tell him yet. So it's
okay, well, let's go on to him in a sec. So, but you say your daughter was 21?
Yeah.
And how long had the build-up been where you made the decision you were going to tell her, right, I'm definitely going to do it, to you actually telling her? How long was that?
Well, I don't know, really. Probably a few weeks or a few months, but I did tell my ex-wife first.
And how was she? Because I imagine...
She was fine. She was fine.
Was she really? Because I'd imagine...
Do you think she had an inkling?
Yeah, she knew.
Can I ask what might have given her the... I mean, have you always been a dramatic dresser?
No, I did tell her about me when we first met.
Right, okay.
There is a childhood issue with why it started.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Which I don't really want to go into.
No, of course not. You don't have to at all. But okay, so she knew when you got married, and she was cool with it?
Yeah. We just grew apart. It had nothing to do with that.
Yeah, okay. And you know the rules, Tony. If I ask anything that you don't want to answer, just tell me to jog on. But I'm genuinely fascinated, right? Did you dress when you were with your wife?
No, she didn't really like it.
Okay.
But it was one of them things that back then it was on my own sort of thing. I wouldn't go out, I wouldn't even dream of it.
Mm. And cards on the table, 10 years ago...
Yeah.
Maybe 5 years ago, I'd be sniggering at this. If I'm completely honest...
Oh, they were still making jokes about it in mainstream comedy, weren't they?
I would be sniggering about this, which is to my shame and is to my embarrassment, because, I've always considered myself kind of with my finger on the pulse. And actually, I would have been making jokes about this. And I'm so grateful that, A, I don't, and B, that you've called in to share this, because this is fascinating, right? And I think this shows how far I've come, let alone society, that you can phone up a late-night radio show and share this stuff and all the stuff you've been through, and neither me or Kath are going, "Oh, flipping it." I'm genuinely fascinated. So when you told your daughter...
Yeah.
What, I mean, I can't even begin to imagine what that was like.
It was just when I was driving back one night and she was in the car with me. She said, "I've got something to tell you." Yeah. I said, "Don't worry, I haven't got cancer. I'm not dying or anything. Everything's fine."
Yeah.
But I need to tell you this, and let me do the whole story first. So I went back to the childhood thing of what happened. She was more upset about that.
Yeah, I bet. I bet she was.
Rather than anything else.
Yeah.
And she said, "Dad, I've had an inkling for a long time." She was more upset that I didn't tell her.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, I'm welling up here. That's beautiful. That is beautiful.
Well, she's amazing now. When I was out in Blackpool... Yeah. She wanted to see photographs of what I looked like to make sure I looked all right and I didn't look
Oh, yeah. She's not going to let you go out looking a mess.
No, not at all.
And so you had a good... You're in Blackpool for the whole weekend?
No, Monday to today.
Okay. And so was there like a festival on, or you just going up there for a little break and you went to the gay area and what was it, just a holiday?
Well, originally I was going to go to Scotland for a few days, and it was just going to be like a chill sort of thing, because I've worked hard all summer, and that cancelled, and I thought, well, what am I going to do? And I thought, let's go to Blackpool and let's bite the bullet and do it, see if I can.
What, and you went on your own and did it?
Yes.
Mate, that's
incredible, you know.
That is.
It was scary.
The first time you got dressed, you stepped out and you shut the front door.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was, I have done it a couple of times, local, but only for about an hour or so.
Yeah.
And I just thought, no, I'm doing it. Why can't I do it? And if someone says something to me, I'll say something back.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, I'm so proud of you. I hope it doesn't sound patronising, because I genuinely, I'm really moved by this. This is incredible. This is, we've got a text in from, I don't know what Blackpool Today is, but he's saying, loving Tony, and what a fabulous daughter. I tell you what it is, because we're of a similar age.
Yeah,
and we are of a generation, and I can imagine how difficult. I know how difficult it is to express your individuality in a non-conventional way.
Here's the other thing, right? We were talking about it last night. You think your life is going along one track, right? And you get used to it and you think, right, I can do this. This isn't ideal, but it's not just about me anymore. So I can live with this. It will be all right. And then you realise you don't have to put up with it.
Yeah.
But it's going to take some doing to change things.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, and there's nothing against them, a lot of people just, I can't do it. I'll just stick the way I am. And they probably live with regret, but they never know. But you've jumped onto the other track.
You're living life, man.
That's what I said when we split. I want to live life now. I'm nearly 50. And it's time for me to have me time. And the reason I wanted to call up, because you've gone through a split. I mean, I was probably going through the bad things as you was. And I just thought, am I going to ring up? I've got the bottle to do this. Mm. No, I haven't. I'll just listen. I was like that for months.
Mate, you've done braver things. It sounds like them phoning up a radio show.
This kind of thing, if untapped, can sometimes destroy people.
Oh, people kill themselves.
That's the other thing. I was getting depressed with it. Yeah. I just thought,
well, because you're not being you.
Yeah.
You're not living your life.
And some people can live with that, and a lot of people can't.
So, telling the boy is the next step.
Yeah.
Got any plans for that, or are you just going to kind of wait and see, you know, wait for a moment to arise, or...?
Your ex will help, won't she?
Yeah, but I'd rather do it just me and him.
Yeah.
But I've got him for a week over Halloween, in the holidays, and I think that's the ideal time. Well, I'm telling.
I think we know what your costume's going to be.
Oh, no, don't.
Let's go trick-or-treating, son. Well, you know, if that moment arises over that week, you know, I wish you the very, very best of luck, man. I hope it doesn't sound patronising.
No, I'm
really moved by the fact that you felt you could come and share this with us. And I think that's incredible, Tony. And there will be people listening who you will have given them confidence and you will have given them courage and you will have inspired them to maybe... just start taking a different direction in their life that they've been thinking about.
Yeah. You've just got to be happy, haven't you? You've got to be happy with yourself. And these few days, I've seen the other part of me. And I'll tell you what, the other part of me is more of a drunken party animal than I am.
There you go. Tony, if you feel up to it, give us a call after Halloween and let us know how it goes, if it goes. And we've got our fingers crossed, and I wish you the best of luck, man. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks a lot. Cheers.
Cheers, Tony. Bye-bye.
Wow.
Flippin' heck. What an amazing call. What an amazing call. What an amazing roller coaster Tony's been through in the last few months. Well, the last few years, it sounds like. But the last few months in particular. Brave is the right word. Brave is the right word. To step out at nearly 50 years old in a completely different mindset and physicality and... say, actually, do you know what? This is me now.
I'm seeing, to be honest, I think I don't know whether I'm just more aware of it because it's talked about more, but I'm seeing more and more trans people or people who are dressing and, you know, don't necessarily know what label they're putting on themselves and it's none of my business. But I'm seeing it a lot more. And whereas in the past, it was the sort of thing people used to laugh about.
Oh, like, I have done.
On nice Saturday afternoon, two Ronnies and stuff, people would laugh about it, right?
Yeah.
But now I think, yeah, I've certainly got more of an understanding. And now when I see someone dressing and, you know, living their best life, I always think, you go for it. I'm,
I wish I was that brave in some of my decisions, you know?
Sandra and Lou, stay there. We'll come to you in a bit. 0344 499 1000. What show this is tonight? This is Talk Radio.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
You're listening to the best of the late night alternative. I'm Catherine Boyle, and this kind of call is the reason we love working at this time of night.
0344 499 1000. Let's go to Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hello, mate. How you doing? Hello, Kath.
Hello, Mark.
He wasn't interested in my answer. I wanted to go straight to the lady. Okay, that's fair.
You talk to Kath.
What can't you believe, Mark?
What Ian said.
What? Which bit?
People shouldn't have sex.
Oh, I know. What's he like?
I know. What's he like? Oh, man,
what are you like?
You want to go to a care home. You want to see what goes on in there.
What, really?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
I spent 14 years in a care home, so I've seen what goes on. Yeah.
Ian, Ian's in a moody because you spoke to me. Ian.
Oh, is he? Oh, bless. Has he got the hump?
He's got, I don't know.
Ian, don't get the hump, mate.
I don't think disabled people should be allowed to have sex.
Why?
Because I just think it's wrong.
Why?
I think it is inappropriate.
But why?
Well,
I'm disabled, I have sex.
Oh, God! Yeah, that is outrageous behaviour.
I know, and I love it.
Dirty, dirty boy.
I know I am.
I'm
only human.
Oh, God! With other human beings?
It's natural.
You're a pervert.
No, I'm not.
You're a pervert.
No, definitely not. Anyway, what I phoned up to talk to you about...
By the way, can I just say, Mark, right, before people complain, because people don't get this show, or get me, right?
Yeah.
Of course I don't believe that disabled people...
I know you know that.
I know you get it. But there'll be people going, this guy... They'll think I'm trying to be like a shock jock or not. I'm playing a part of a reactionary right-wing idiot. Of course disabled people can have sex. I just don't...
Just don't want it shoved down your throat, do you?
Shag a pony. You're a pervert.
Love 18. She's 30. Does that make me dirty?
You're a pervert.
There we go. Anyway,
Mark. What are you saying, Ian?
Yes. Well, anyway, Mark.
People will say you're being such and such.
There's nothing I hate more. Hello, does this microphone work? Is it your ears that are broken? There's nothing worse than being called such and such. I hate being called.
You know what I'm trying to say.
Are you on speakerphone?
But
hello, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear.
Just wondered why you were constantly talking when I'm talking, and they're not responding to our questions.
All right, yeah, I'll let you talk. Go on then, talk.
I was just wondering, you know, why you weren't answering any of our questions when we asked them.
What?
There we go. He can't hear us. Right, go on. We'll shut up. What you got?
No, I was going to say, I couldn't listen to your show live last night, so I listened to it today.
Yeah.
From last night.
Oh, yeah.
And you were saying about people being shouted up in the street.
Yeah.
Well, I had a lovely incident about a couple of weeks ago when someone shouted to me out of a white van. Called me such and such. I won't say the name.
People using this such and such term these days. I hate it.
Because I don't want to say the name because it's very rude.
Yeah.
And they said something to me. So
it's very mysterious.
They got up to the traffic light.
Yes.
And the light turned red.
Oh.
So they were stuck there. Uh-oh. I banged on the window. I said, "What'd you say? What'd you say?" And they couldn't even look at me. They couldn't even look at me.
Wow.
Stared ahead, couldn't even look.
Were you
at me.
In your car or something?
No, I mean my electric wheelchair.
Oh, well, then this is what I've done with a bus driver once. Right, I fell out with a bus driver on a route I used to live on, and he was the only bus driver on that route. And it got to a point where he would drive past the bus stop, right? But if I was there and no one else was there. But then once he did that, he drove past the bus stop, and then the lights turned red. I went, right. So I went and stood in front of him and got my phone out and just filmed him. Right? And I was there in the street about 3 or 4 minutes filming him. Traffic, the other lane of traffic's moving. He can't. And he's just sat there covering his face. And then I heard a voice from behind me going, "Ian!" And I turned around. It was my wife. And she just looked at me. She said, I expect you home in 3 minutes. And she walked off. And I kind of had to, I had to stay there for another 30 seconds to, you know, because I didn't want to look like a cuck. And then I went to the guy, you got away with it this time. But so I guess you should have just rolled your wheelchair in front of him and then said your battery had died.
No, I just banged on his window and said, what are you saying? And he couldn't, the funny thing is,
such
the people
such.
Around were looking at him and they knew what he'd said.
Yep, yep, yep.
And he couldn't say nothing. He just looked
at his such
head
such.
Until it got to green and he just drove off.
Beautiful.
I was like, yeah.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people, aren't there?
Too many.
There is a lot of people like that. And it used to bug me so much. It used to get to me so much. I mean, I used to cry about it. Seriously, it used to make me cry.
Yeah.
Honest to God. But then I thought, what the hell? I've got to fight back a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So you started having sex with these people?
What?
Well, if they were fit enough, maybe. Yeah.
This is the noise I make when I'm having sex. Ooga shaka, ooga, ooga, ooga shaka, ooga, ooga, ooga shaka, ooga, ooga, ooga shaka. And then when it finishes, this is the noise that I hear in my head.
You're a pervert.
So, So that's where that's taking us to, Mark. Thank you for that. Thank you for that.
Let's... Listen out for that one, Sam.
Let's go to Angela. Good evening, Angela.
Hi, Ian, Cousin. How are you guys tonight?
You're a pervert.
We know that. There's a woman in my life, I just can't get enough of her. I hope one day she'll be my wife, I want to spend my life with her. She's called Angela, she's my Angela. But I don't even know if she even knows I exist.
God.
When she calls me up, I get a little stirring down inside. I want to hold her cups. I want to lick her behind, because she's my Angela. Yeah, yeah, she's my Angela. And I don't even know if she even knows I exist.
You're a pervert.
There we go.
You want to hold her cups?
Huh?
You want to hold her cups?
That's between me and Angela.
Well,
who recently sent me...
I don't know if you know this, but your inner monologue just seeped out quite
a lot.
You
fell out of your chair then. She recently sent me a friend request, which I'm considering. I'm considering.
Don't bring the show into it, mate.
Do you know that song, Considering a Move to Memphis?
No.
Do you not know that song?
No.
Ba-ba-ba-da-ba-dum-bum. Ba-ba-ba-da-ba-bum-bum. I'm considering a move to Memphis. A move to Memphis. I'm considering. Ba-ba-ba-da-ba. You don't know that song?
No.
Do you know that song, Angela?
I thought of.
It's a group called the Colour Blind James Experience. Colour Blind. There we go. This is a great. I won't play the full thing because it goes on for about 8 minutes. But it's 7 minutes long. Here we go. Listen to this. This is a great song. Great bit of music. Here we go. Dun, 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 dun. This is a great... This
sounds
is,
like Paul Simon.
Yeah, isn't it? It's where he nicked it from. Not Africa.
I'm considering a move to Memphis with my hair all aglow. When I arrive in Memphis, I'm bound to meet up with someone I might know. Ba 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 ba. I'm considering a move to Memphis, a move to Memphis. I'm considering.
It goes on like that. That's a great song.
Does he decide by the end or not?
Let's skip to the end. Let's get the last. Here we go.
That's what I came here for. I'm considering a move to Memphis. I'm considering,
I'm considering.
I think he does go in the end, yeah. Anyway, Angela, a lot of mouth breathing going on, so let's dive straight in, so to speak. What have you got for us?
I had to go to doctors tonight.
Oh, tonight? Nighttime doctors?
Yeah.
Wowzers. What's wrong? Everything all right?
Yeah, I just had a bit of a painful ear. It's been very bright red.
Oh, hey, Angela, painful ear. Tell me, I know all about it. I work with Kath.
Oh, no. Cheap shot.
Late Night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We're going to finish up the show with another one of our very favourite interviews from 2018 with the one and only Dave Hill. You know, there's more to him than Christmas songs.
There he goes. There he is. That is one of the most insane songs I've ever heard. Ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome the guitarist from Nicky Nacky Noo? It's Dave Hill.
Nicky Nacky Noo.
You were almost...
He's obviously checking things out.
You were going to be called Nicky Nacky Noo instead of Dave.
It was because we had this agent bloke in London, like, and he keeps saying, yeah, all right, Nicky Nacky Noo. And we're going, what the heck's Nicky Nacky Noo? I think it was one of those off-the-beam thoughts that we had occasionally in the band. Sometimes you're trying to change your name. We came to London in those days, and the studio guy said, I like the sound of you. He said, would you make an album? And he said, and we made an album for this Jack Baverstock at Fontana Records, yeah, who seemed to be quite connected as a man. He showed an interest in us. And he said, the thing is, he says, I don't like your name, you know, In-Betweens. I mean, what's the In-Betweens?
Yeah.
So he got a bit like that about the Nicky Nacky Noo.
I've been in bands when I was younger. Coming up with a band name is the hardest thing, because you want something that's kind of catchy, but you can say over and over again, and you don't get bored of it. How did you... Because it was Ambrosia. But Dave Hill from Slade, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, in case you wondered. Ambrosia Slade, how did you come up with that and then shorten it?
Well, basically, he offered some money to members of the staff to work at Fontana to come up with a name. And there was a woman there, apparently, who used to call things she owns by names, so she remembers them. So it could be a purse, which is Ambrose, and it could be a bag named Slade. That's the going story, and she got 50 quid. She got 50 quid, and she came up with this idea of Ambrose Slade. Jack Baverstock went for it. He said, yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's much better than the In-Betweens, you see. So, okay, fine, and... Then he said, but you'll never do anything with Northern Management. That's what he said. He said, you need to be somebody in the business in London to actually hear you. And of course, he was right. But what we didn't realise is his connection from that time led to a connection to an agent in London.
Yeah.
I think his name was John Gunnell. John Gunnell, I think, was connected to Chaz or Stigwood, Robert Stigwood.
Yeah.
Something like... It was like a little bit of a melting pot of several...
Stigwood was the agent for the Bee Gees?
Yes, he was, yeah.
And Chaz Chandler had been in the Animals.
Yeah, I think there was a connection there somewhere. And I've never really asked Chaz precisely how he heard about us.
Yeah.
But John Gunnell met us and said, I know somebody, right? That's the way it was. I know somebody. And the somebody he knew was Chas Chandler, and it was like two things meeting that maybe are looking for each other.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know that saying, two souls that can spend a lifetime and eventually find each other. It's a bit deep, that one, but I think that's another side of me. But the thing is, had we not been ready, we might not have been ready to be heard by someone.
Yeah.
Prior to that, it was many years of working.
Yeah.
I'd like to point out to your listeners that this was no short-term job. This was no expert.
You've been doing this for a while.
Yeah. There was no reality shows. There was no quick fixes. You've got two things in this business, mainly playing live to gather an audience, then possibly radio. If you're lucky, you might get a bit of recording. If you're lucky. But most of that, it was road work, playing. Like the Beatles, they had to work the pubs and clubs like we did and the Mecca ballrooms and go to Germany or whatever they did. But from this situation of in the studio, he got us to make an album and we call it Beginnings, you see. And it's got a lot of extraordinary things on that album.
Is that the one with Martha, My Dear on?
Yes, and a Frank Zappa song.
Wow.
Right? You know, Ain't Got No Art. I mean, we were certainly a bit abstract.
Yeah.
We weren't a pop band. We didn't always get a lot of work because we wouldn't do chart material, you see. See, sometimes promoters in Germany would ask for a band who plays top 20 material.
Well, that was the gig in the 60s, was a band would go and play, you know, a couple of hours in a nightclub, but you had to do all the hits from the top 20. Yeah. Maybe you could sneak in a couple of your own songs.
Yeah.
But you guys, I've got to say, Beginnings, that was the Skinhead.
No, it was before that. That was the Ambrose Slade. So we were Ambrose Slade. We got Northern Management. Then Chas heard something, and then John Gaunt said, look, I'll put him in one of my clubs in London, which was just off Bond Street somewhere. Right. It's called Rasputin. And it was one of those where you go downstairs, and there's a little stage up the corner where they're playing records. So there's a bit of a DJ, and we're stuffed up a corner, quite a small stage, very low. And then in comes Chas, and we see him coming down the stairs, you see, because it was only small. And we just did what we've always done. We didn't pretend to be anything other than what we were.
Yeah.
But he watched us, and he just came across and said, I want a manager. Wow. And it was like some movie clip, you know, where somebody walks in slow motion with a cigar, you know. Hi.
I'm gonna make you guys stars.
He was so enthusiastic. And one of the first things he said to me was, he said, oh, you're quite small, aren't you? he says, you're quite small. I said, yeah. He said, I think we could have a really good idea with you. Get the biggest guitar you could possibly get, right, and put it on you. He said, and I thought, I like this man.
He was speaking your language at that point.
We should let's get the plug in now. We're going to get plenty of plugs in. We've been talking about this book all week, Dave. You got a book out, Dave Hill. So here it is, the autobiography. This is an updated version because it came out last year, and there's an extra chapter in this one.
Yeah,
we have been banging on about this all week. You very kindly brought a copy in case we didn't have one. We've got three somewhere on this premises. Mm-hmm. I've devoured it. I've read it. I've loved it. You can buy it, of course, on Amazon, the usual places. If you go, dear listener, to I've tweeted the link to the Big Green Bookshop, which I think you read a couple of weeks
really
ago.
Oh, yeah, it's really good, that one.
Our mate Simon runs that, and he's got a load of signed copies. Probably not a load now, probably just a handful. But I've tweeted the link. You can get signed copies for a tenner.
Yeah, that's a good bookshop.
It's a great bookshop. Simon is a big fan of the independent bookshops. So tell us about the Skinhead phase, then, because that is for those, you know, everyone knows what Slade looked like, but the pictures of you guys with the Skinheads is a real shock to the system.
It was a shock to the system when we did it.
I bet it was.
I mean, we'd all got nice girls when we had long hair. They actually left us when we cut all our
hair. You had a posh millionaire's daughter or something.
Yeah,
I
was going out with a girl from Alton Towers, which is a big
theme park.
Yeah, I sort of fancied myself maybe marrying into the family. You know, so you'd have to correct me if I'm wrong, but I went out with a girl. She was quite posh. She sort of said things like mater and pater.
Crikey, that is posh.
Yeah. And she got a sports car. And then she'd come to our humble council house and pick me up. And, she was quite pretty. I met her when we did the old band did a show on the Alton Towers Park, you see. So, and I think we were on with a group called The Love Affair at the time, and they were really happening. And I met this girl, and she was like twiggy thin, you know. She was blonde, and I've always liked blondes. And I do remember the day I rung her to say, I've had a phone call from my manager, Chas Chandler, who's told me to get my hair cut off. He said it'll be worthwhile because I'll be a millionaire. So, you know, and I thought, you know, I like the sound of those. How many noughts are there in a million? And I was going, in other words, Chas was very persuasive, right? What happened about this Skinhead thing, it wasn't our idea. It was our publicist, Keith Altham, and he wouldn't mind me mentioning this. Keith is a lovely man, and he's the big publicist of the time.
Yeah.
Enemy writer, he publicist of the Stones and all sorts of things he was doing. Anyway, he was our publicist, and Chaz was thinking, now, there's a lot of bands with long hair. I think they were just trying to figure out some way of getting us in known. You see,
every band needed a gimmick, didn't they?
Something.
That's something different.
So hard. No matter how good you were, it was trying to get an inroad somehow. You know, he was trying to think of a way to let the powers that be know about us.
I think in the book you talk about you had a casual look, so it was not unlike the Stones.
We looked
at
a little
time.
Bit. How can I put it? Late '60s was very much slightly flower powery, very curly, and you know, a bit sort of kind of a mixture of looking slightly feminine. And of course, the clothes were great for me. I loved all that Kensington Market. Oh yeah, we'll go there, buy the flares, and it was all like that then. And we'd come through the flower power and all that stuff, and you know, Pink Floyd and all that. We'd come through that, and so we, with Chaz, we got long hair. So yes, we probably looked like a lot of groups as well, but we looked pretty good.
Yeah.
And Keith Elton said something to Chaz. He said, "Oh, Chaz, you know, there's this skinhead movement. They don't have a group." He said, Chaz was going, ding. He was going, "No, they don't have a group. Maybe they could have us."
Yeah.
You know, and he said, "What they got to do?" He said, "Cut the hair off." Anyway, Keith Elton said that. He said, "Yeah, it's a good idea." Anyway, then Keith started to get a kind of bothered about it. So he rung Chaz up again. He says, "You can't do it, Chaz." He went, "Too late. Too late, Keith. They're down the barbers, all having their cut off." And Keith's going, "Oh, no, they'll blame me." He said, "They're nice guys. You can't..." He'd already done it. And I remember I went home and it was all chopped off. And Dad's looking at me, you know. And you know what? We had to go to the Isle of Arran, which took all night to get there. It's way up Scotland and it's cross on a ship, to go and play two or three venues in the Isle of Arran. And we were scared in case any skinheads turned up and they might beat us up. You know?
You look like the Bobber Boys.
I love the fact, because Slade, you know, the Super Yob was... Where did the Super Yob nickname come from? Because it makes you sound like such a tough guy. And I get the vibe that you're kind of a pussycat, really.
I got a good heart. I think... Yeah, I'm not. I know I was never in fights at school. I never did that. Not. I didn't. I always seemed to have friends that beat people up, but I didn't have been... You know, there was always something going on. But, yeah, the Super Yob, he's coming back to Keith Altham again.
Right.
It was him.
Yeah.
Keith figures quite a bit of my life. Keith was... It was at a time when people were called superstars or megastars.
Yeah.
And I had a number plate, right, which was on a car I bought. Oh, it was Sunbeam Alpine.
There we go.
And what I did not know was the number plate. I never looked.
Yeah.
I bought the car. I sold my Spitfire, a little Spitfire red one. And I just bought it. And it, one day I went to Solihull to do a pub. But it was a posh pub, you know. It was, "Hey, old boy, half a pint." And it was a little bit like that. And I parked my car. And they were all Jaguars and things. And this bloke comes on and he goes, "I say," he said, "Yobby." I said, what do you mean, Yobby?" He said, that number plate at the back of your car, "Yobby." It was a bit like that, you know, some old colonel or something. And I'm going, "Oh, yeah, I didn't notice that." Of course, the indication of what a yob means, you see.
Yeah.
So, anyway, this kind of thing stuck in Keith Altham's mind. He said, "Well, yeah, that Yob one." He said, "Why don't we call him Super Yob, you say?" And from that idea formulated the kind of guitar that became along.
Yeah.
That I had this guitar to match my costumes, and we called it Super Yob.
Yeah.
So it's become an attachment. You can see
it's there on the front, yeah.
There it is, That's the original one, that is, right?
Have you still got that guitar?
No. I'll tell you who's got that guitar. Marco Peroni from the Adam and the Ants.
Has he really?
Yeah. He bought it out of a shop.
Wasn't expecting it going there, blimey.
Well, the reason he's got it is because I flogged it to a shop.
Right.
And that was a mistake.
Yeah, of course.
But he hasn't got it in his possession at the moment. It's actually in an exhibition in Liverpool.
Oh, wow.
Of memorabilia.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's Davey Supiob, because that's what it is. But I had it remade by the same people.
Right.
But I put some lights up the neck, as you do.
You got some
Mark
great,
two.
You got some great guitars in the '70s. I know a band that was really influenced by you. I think they ripped quite a lot off you. Were Kiss, of course, in the States.
Yeah.
And Ace Frehley kind of took the guitars to the next level. Ace Frehley, the guitarist in Kiss, would have lights that would go up and down like disco lights, and then he'd fire rockets from his guitar and stuff like that. But Kiss, I think, came and saw you when you went to the States and kind of went. Well, we can do this.
This was in the full frontal Supiob days, right? And I got that guitar. And we played somewhere in New York. It was quite a... it was a famous venue where a lot of rock bands played. And we headed to New York because that's where the impact of the publicity was for us, you see. And LA and all those. But New York was like, oh, right, we're going to do this gig in New York, you see. So there's a funny story coming up here, which is in the book. But it's... It was a night. I got the platforms on. They're quite high that time, and I'd got the outfit and the yob. We didn't know Kiss, and we didn't know who they were.
Yeah.
They were just in the audience. It wasn't until much later that I met Gene Simmons from Kiss,
right.
Who relates the story.
Yeah,
and he got it wrong, but it sounded funny what he thought. Right, I came on the stage. And we had what you call a little walkway. You could go down the centre. You often see it now in big shows.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Mick Jagger was walking right in the middle of the audience, right? Well, we had a little walkway, you see, and I spotted that. The problem was I was a bit enthusiastic. And I went weighing down the front, you know, doing all that, and I fell. I fell on my back, and it looked like a Reeves and Mortimer sketch. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but... My boots come up. It was like, and I thought, how do I get round this?
Yeah.
And I'm going, I'm looking round, and the others are killing themselves laughing.
I bet.
So I tried to make it look I actually did it on purpose,
yes,
right?
You styled it out.
Wasn't that funny? And the Kiss members bought it. Because when I saw him, he said... he comes up and he goes, you know what the Americans like? They go, Mr. Hill, awesome, you know. And they shake your hand. It's got Gene Simmons, a big tall guy. He said, I saw you in the song, Radio City or something like that in New York. He said, you came out to the audience and you went V sign. Right, well, I never do that anyway. And he said, you did that to the audience and then... You went on your back and kicked your legs out. I thought that was really out of sight. That's part of the act, of course, isn't it? Oh, yes, it is, yeah.
Let's take a quick break. We've got Dave Hill from Slade, not Nicky Nacky Noo, not the in-between.
No.
He's got a brilliant book, So Here It Is. It's such a cracking read. It's going to make a brilliant Christmas present. This is the Late Night Alternative with Ian and Kath on Talk Radio.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
I love your missus, by the way, from this book. From what I've read about her, she's a superstar, she is.
Well, she's solid.
She?
And she's a black country girl, you know, that means work, you know, you grew up in factories and things
she's
like that,
great.
You know. And basically, she didn't like groups anyway, so... So, and she's blonde. And I met her at a time when, you know, it was all miniskirts and Twiggy and all that sort of stuff, you know.
How long have you been with her? That's over 50 years, isn't it?
No, not quite that long.
Oh.
We got married in 73.
Right, okay.
So when the big year.
45.
So we went to America and got married in Tijuana, which is a dump. And it's $35 to get married, you know. And we didn't think we were married, but we were. It was legal.
God, there's so much I want to ask you. So I want to go back to marriage in a second. Very quickly, I just wanted the comparison of after Don had his accident where his girlfriend was killed and his memory was was totally impacted. The way you worked in the studio then changed, and what he would do the drums on his own first, is that how it went?
What happened with the Christmas song is after the accident, which we didn't know whether he was going to survive.
Yeah,
his girlfriend got killed. She went through the windscreen of a Rolls Royce. Right, this was an horrific night.
Yeah,
I didn't quite capture the impact of it, when I had the phone call, because it all came via Dad. Mm. And Dad's going, I heard that. And then I heard my sister scream. And she had to ring. The girl who got killed was Carol's friend. Mm. And she had to ring the father to find out if it was true. She thought it was a nosy neighbour that was giving her. But this is like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So it isn't a nosy neighbour. This is not.
Yeah.
And at first we thought he just had a bump. We didn't realise the immensity. It went from a bump to he's in hospital and his girlfriend's dead. And it's all happened so quickly. And we were number one in the charts with Squeeze Me, Please Me. We'd just done Earl's Court. We'd done all the big
first
ones.
First band to play Earl's Court, was that right?
Not the first. Bowie was before of us.
Right, okay.
I don't think Bowie fared very well, right. But we did.
Yeah, 20,000.
And I think it was pretty remarkable. From what I heard, they laid on extra trains on the underground to cope with the fans because they're all in their glitter and top hats. It must have looked amazing, actually. 1973, can you imagine that? We'd done 2 London Palladiums, right? One in the afternoon and one at night. In one day, we did 2 shows, right? And the balconies, there was caution about the balconies then. They would never have us back because the fans were making the balconies move by bouncing. Jeez. All this kind of stuff
was
going
on. A lot of stomping.
But I mean, I don't think the Palladium were quite used to our kind of music. And in the audience was the Zulu actor, what's his name, Stanley Baker.
Yeah.
And Stanley Baker was sitting in a box watching us, you see. And Nod said, oh, over there, Mr. Zulu. You know, I can imagine, can't you, Mr. Zulu. And we were all scared of him, you know, Mr. Zulu. You know, but because we'd worked for Stanley Baker at Lincoln Festival when he actually put us on as an outsider group, which actually we sold the festival. We went down so well that it suddenly made a mark in the newspapers.
Yeah.
So we cited Stanley Baker as being a little bit of good luck for us, you know. He put us on. It was raining all the time. And when we went on, it stopped raining. And everybody was jumping around and we got him going.
Yeah.
And he come on stage and I was chucking glitter at him, you know. It was really funny. But moving on, I tend to sidetrack. What was the first question?
We were talking about the horrific car accident and how and just.
Oh, yeah. You were talking about the drum kit. Well, what happened was we went to New York and Chaz thought, well, maybe we could do the odd show with Don and see how he fares. Because what had happened with the accident, the bang on the head caused him to have a memory problem.
Yeah.
Right. And he still has a memory problem to this day, but it's not as bad.
Right.
But it created a concussion.
So he couldn't remember what he'd done the day before.
He didn't remember.
And he couldn't remember the hits.
Well, he couldn't remember the girl that got killed either.
Really?
And in fact, the girl he thought about was his old girlfriend before
man.
It. So he didn't know he couldn't taste. He didn't know he couldn't smell either. Yeah. And we didn't know that until later when we found out he'll never have that back,
wow.
Right? The memory thing was a point where he rings you and goes, what time we're leaving? 10 minutes later, stone, what time we're leaving?
Oh, mate.
Then again, and you reach a point where you have to back off it.
Yeah, of course.
Because it's quite intense. Because Don... It's a bit, Don's, each day is like Groundhog Day to Don.
Yeah.
In other words, it's a new day. I mean, he had to write in those days what he was going to wear the next day and what where he was going.
Man.
So imagine that, we're in New York, right? And this is something that really is remarkable. We're in New York, John Lennon cancels some studio time at the record plant.
Yeah.
The record plant is the top studio in New York, right? Chaz said, we've got some free time, he said. And he knew about the Christmas song. He knew there was this idea, but he hadn't heard it.
Yeah.
So. He said, Chaz says to us, we were doing it. He said, why don't we go in, get Don on the kit and record this Christmas song? So it was going to be a bit of a therapeutic job, you say.
Yeah.
So what we do, we go in together normally and record. We didn't do that this time,
right.
Because he wouldn't get through the song for a start, right? Because he might get partway and stop. Anything could happen. So what we did, which we never do, is we rebuilt the kit.
Right.
We got the theory of the song, But none of us really knew the song very well. Jim said, this is the chords. Nod's got the lyrics. And a lot of things you hear on the record were thought up on the day or the week.
Isn't it funny to think of a time when even Slade didn't know the Merry Christmas everybody? Isn't it funny?
Nobody knew that we were creating a phenomenon, but bearing in mind we were huge then and probably the biggest band in Europe, and really we'd had Tragedy.
Yeah.
And that Tragedy had knocked some wind out of us, you know, because we were all this before that, right? It was all, come on, feel the noise, you know the kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was all, you know, squeeze me, please me, and all that. Anyway, and so we'd already had two straight to number ones. We're in New York, we're recording it. Then we started to overdub the things. Then we replaced some of the kit. And then Don plays this shuffle, which is a characteristic thing he does on records with Slade. And that really worked. And he wasn't losing it at all. He might be asking you the same question every half an hour, but he did it. We completed it, never heard it mixed, you see. Yeah. We did all the backing vocals in the corridor where the office people were coming in. And
in the middle of summer, I'm guessing.
Yeah, in the middle of summer. It's 100 degrees outside. And they're thinking these are a bunch of lunatics from England singing about Christmas.
Yeah.
And they're going to work in the offices, you see. And you imagine these buildings in New York. They're monsters, these buildings. So we're doing that. Then we leave it. And then we walk away. And I think we did one or two shows, you see. And then we went back to England. Chaz took the tapes and took them to England to work on them with an engineer at Olympic Studios, where he always did Slade records. And they mixed it, right? And it wasn't until... I don't think we'd even heard it, actually. I think it wasn't until we were in Belgium, right? And we were doing some promotion. And the premise of this song was coming out. And then we got a phone call from the record company. And there's this sort of... sort of. It sounds a little bit French to me. Slade, what a marvellous record, he said. I've just received this record from England, he said. I think it's wonderful. He says, this is just right for Belgium, and the fans will love it. Come into the office and we'll have some champagne. Well, this is 9 o'clock in the morning, right? and we just had breakfast. And it's like, and of course we're quite comical, like, ooh, let's pop down and have some champagne, don't we? You know, it was a little bit like that. So we all went in, and we got the wives with us. I got my wife with me, and because they were with us, you know, we were doing the tour. And he puts it on, you see, and we're listening, going, "Oh, yeah." And so we haven't really heard it, you know. It's it sounds pretty good. Champagne. Moyt and Shandon comes out, you know, bubble. More champagne? Yeah, more champagne. We'll play it again. And then, the third time he played it, we were smashed. and we're all going, yay! It does sound good. I think you're right. You know, it's a little bit like that.
Yeah, of course.
And then when we got back to England, obviously we'd spoke to Chaz, and Chaz said, phew, Radio 1's going crazy about it. It was all a bit like that. And the record company's doing their pieces about it. And we got home, and I went up to Solihull, where I lived, and he rung me, Chaz, and he said, are you sitting down, man? I said, what do you mean? He said, 500,000 records have gone out today.
Wow.
500,000 records now. We're keeping the charts for 20 years.
Those numbers.
Never mind.
Sounds crazy, those numbers.
You know, and it was like 500,000 records, you know. It was almost like a firecracker, you know. Mm. It was like, do you know, you cannot stop the river pushing.
Yeah.
And it was just something like a force of nature that something made a direct connection with the public in 1973 when there were three-day working hours, strikes, tellies went off at 10 o'clock.
Oh, it was grim.
People and it was probably worse than Brexit,
yeah,
if it can get much worse than that. But it was that kind of like a bit despondent, a bit sort of, and then this record comes out, and it hit I think it's because it's so damn British, and I think it's so in your face, not Jingle Bells, it's not about that, it's about exactly what you do at Christmas, right? The family coming round, the granny line about the old
genius.
Song.
It's,
yeah,
it's
but that's so
genius.
Simple. And Nod actually went down to his dad's council house and had a few beers and wrote those lyrics, right? That's exactly what happened.
Late Night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.